on fuel prices. Well, if we could harness that, then we probably would be able to give away energy. But that's the nature of British politics, isn't it? Drill, baby, drill has become the latest phrase used by stupid people to disguise the fact that they don't understand anything. Is it going to work? Attempts to pin the blame for the costs of Donald Trump's war on the man, the Prime Minister, who opposed it, are they going to succeed?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer is preparing to host business leaders in Downing Street to discuss the economic impact of the Iran war. Talks are expected to focus on the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, which has disrupted global oil supplies. The government says it plans to help those who need it most if energy bills spiral. But the Shadow Energy Secretary, Claire Coutinho's, told LBC this morning the UK shouldn't be relying on foreign imports of oil and gas.
Last year, we lost a third of our refineries in Britain because of these crippling carbon taxes that the government is choosing to impose. So again, this comes back to our reliance on imports. We should be making the most of our own refineries, not driving them out of business. We should be making the most of the North Sea rather than increasing our imports of foreign gas. We should be making the most of what we could produce in Britain, and that's the most important thing for our energy security.
The Chancellor will join a virtual meeting of G7 ministers later and urge them to accelerate the move away from fossil fuels. Rachel Reeves will argue it's the only way to get off the roller coaster of international oil and gas markets and cut bills for good. Separately, the Environment Secretary has told LBC the option of extending the freeze on fuel duty beyond September remains under review. Emma Reynolds says the Chancellor is keeping a close eye on rising oil prices due to the conflict in the Middle East. Police are being given more time to question a man arrested after seven people were hit and injured by a car in Derby. A 36-year-old was detained in the city centre on Saturday night on suspicion of attempted murder. The final details of the compensation scheme for drivers missold car finance agreements will be published today. The Financial Conduct Authority previously said 14 million deals between 2007 and 2024 were unfair. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is following developments.
It is thought that each missold PCP or higher purchase finance deal could be eligible for around £700. And it's all because of a scandal that meant customers were not properly told about the levels of commission that were being paid by lenders to car dealers.
And Sean Dyche and Roberto De Zerbi are among the favourites to replace Igor Tudor at Tottenham Hotspur. The interim boss left Spurs yesterday after just 44 days in the job. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 74 points at 10,041. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK through Monday, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Another day, another headline. Reporters talk about green shoots or what AI will bring us. The naysayers will see bubbles, not booms, or maybe for once, there's nothing new to report. Whatever is announced next, we're here to help guide you through the noise. We've helped Britain invest through 45 years of change. That's why we're the UK's number one investment and savings platform trusted by 2 million people. Hargreaves Lansdown, helping Britain invest for it all. Investment returns vary. For claim verification, visit hl.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. No, really it is. And you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Long may that continue. It's a good one today. There's something a bit strange happening in the world. I don't know if you've noticed, and I think it's probably far too early to celebrate, but the engines or the sources, the institutions that generally dominate discourse in this country have never, odd though this may sound, they've never looked less powerful. The attempts to staple the United Kingdom to the United States and Israel when they launched this hideous war in Iran have failed miserably. I think the attitudes of most of the public towards Gaza demonstrates that the engines that traditionally dominate discourse in this country are failing. Tony Blair weighing in this weekend, apparently not noticing that his credibility disappeared quite possibly forever the moment he joined Trump's board of peas. And the attempts now to somehow blame Keir Starmer for the economic impact of the war that he opposed, I don't want to say bravely opposed, but he certainly opposed it in the face of ludicrous criticism and opposition from people who either don't understand anything or pretend not to understand anything because that's what they are paid to do. And listen, I've given up trying to tell the difference. I mean, what do? You take a Badenoch or a Little John. Do they not understand anything when they talk about how we've got to do everything we can to support the war, or I've never been more ashamed to be British that Keir Starmer's not joining in? Or do they just pretend not to understand things because that's what they are paid to do in the case of professional commentators, or what they somehow think voters want in the face of ludicrous politicians? I do not know. But we turn our attention, I think, inevitably today to the relationship between fuel costs, well, all costs, actually, and what is going on in the Middle East. I don't know that we're going to do a Donald Trump-based conversation today, at least not directly. I oscillate. Do you oscillate? I oscillate between thinking it's not only essential but also fascinating to try to analyse what is going on, and thinking that it's utterly pointless anyway. It's like trying to make sense of a blancmange, you know, trying to predict which way it will wobble next, or whatever figure of speech or metaphor you prefer. So I oscillate. Today is Monday. I do not know what we will do tomorrow. I don't even know for sure what we're going to do today, to be honest with you, which is problematic given that we're 6 minutes into the show. But I don't think we're going to do a sort of direct Donald Trump question. If we do, it will be somewhere along the lines of what the hell happens if this goes on for ages. But I think we know one of the most obvious and immediate answers to that. Very simply, everything goes up in price. There's quite a depressing story in the news today. I don't know if you saw it, about job vacancies going up briefly until the war started. It was one of those little glimmers of hope that was just about, if you talk about the oil tanker of the United Kingdom and the ludicrous inheritance that the Labour government received when they won the last election, beginning to turn things round, and then there is a war. Then there is a war that the economic impacts of which haven't really been seen for about 50 years, potentially. Not me saying that, remember. It's Gulf states comparing it to Suez, and it's the International Energy Authority comparing it to the oil crisis of the 1970s. And that's what, what I really want to do is a bit nebulous. And I can't do it without you. So if you don't want to do this, then we'll find something else to do. But I'm really interested today in energy. I'm interested in the politics of it, obviously, whether or not you think they're going to successfully blame Keir Starmer for the costs of the war that they attacked him for opposing. It is genuinely surreal. I don't like the characterization of my country, because it offends me in some ways as a place where stupid is God. But some days it's really hard to resist, isn't it? The idea that the people who get the big bucks are now either pretending to understand the situation in the North Sea or preparing to blame Keir Starmer for the economic impacts of the war that he opposed and refused in the face of quite extraordinary abuse from a foreign leader, Donald Trump in this case, to join. They're going to try to blame him for it. Whether or not you think that will work is interesting to me, politically interesting to me. I mean, it's obviously cost of living related, but cost of fuel specifically. But here's the question that I think is actually more important. And I want you to, if you think this is an easy question to answer, I'd like you to remember that for a lot of people listening, it won't be. In fact, for a lot of people listening, what you think is fairly straightforward and obvious will be completely invisible. Because if you look at what happened after Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine and after Donald Trump attacked Iran, you will realize that our dependency on fossil fuels remains potentially crippling. Ed Miliband, the Energy Secretary, is dedicated to two things. He's dedicated to self-sufficiency and energy security. So they're very similar to each other, effectively. The idea is that we should, and politicians, remember, in this country, don't do the big picture. They don't do the long game, except here. The idea is that we cannot afford to be beholden to the unpredictability of the world when it comes to energy. And if you are to take your energy from sustainable sources, then you not only become secure, but you also become self-sufficient. The two, in fact, are inextricable, right? If your energy is self-sufficient, in other words, we don't have to rely upon anybody else to keep the home fires burning, to keep the engine ticking over, to keep the lights on, to keep the wheels turning. We don't have to rely on anybody else to do that. And then, crucially, we also, as a consequence of that self-sufficiency, we cease to be insecure. We no longer, because it's not just the economics of it. Do you see what I mean? It's also the politics of it, the social impact of it. We no longer watch our lives, our quality of life diminish and our cost of living increase because a deranged liar like Donald Trump has decided to launch a war in the Middle East, quite probably to distract attention from the amount of times he appears in the Epstein files. I don't do dead cats, you know I don't, but I think sometimes Occam's razor delivers conclusions that you might not like, but you're going to find quite hard to resist. And I'm not an expert on this. Well, I'm not an expert on anything, as you know, but I just find it really strange that there's even a debate to be had. I find it really strange that there is a big groundswell of argument. I look at the world. Listen, I am not a hippie. I'm not a vegetarian. So therefore, I'm obviously not a vegan. I'm not a big petrol head, as you know, but I don't particularly make my lifestyle decisions based upon environmental concerns. I try. The biggest thing I've ever done, probably, at the behest of my children when Greta Thunberg was in her pomp, was to stop taking a car to work every morning and returning to public transport. To be honest with you, I probably prefer public transport. I can read on the train in a way that I can't on the underground train, in the way that I can't on in a car. I've got that sort of weird motion sickness thing going on. I stick my headphones on, I go into the zone, I play Spelling Bee, do a couple of crosswords, whatever it may be, on my phone. So it's not a massive sacrifice, is what I'm saying to you. And it's no slower either, depending on the time of day that I come into work. So the biggest thing I did for environmental reasons was to eschew the... I'm going to say the chauffeur-driven car, even though, you know, really just a glorified Uber, but the chauffeur-driven car that used to bring me into work. So I just want to establish that. I am not, by any stretch of the imagination, an arch-environmentalist. I don't say that with pride. I think that I should be. I should be, but I fly. I fly on my holidays. I've got friends, I've got family members who really don't now, who really make decisions based on eschewing, I'll probably not use that word again. I think that's enough for today. But on rejecting air travel, because the economic impact, the environmental impact of air travel is so huge. So, it's not quite pursed lips territory, but there are people who obviously disapprove of people who fly a lot. And as with vegetarianism, they're right. They are just right. We should all fly less. Our reliance upon oil and petrol is ridiculous because it's a diminishing resource that is going up in cost and going down in availability. It is so logical to say we've got to do this less. We've got to start weaning ourselves off this stuff. It's just so obviously logical. I think you can see what question we're heading towards, can't you? So it's inarguably logical to say we should use it less. We should wean ourselves off it. We should find alternatives. And I, like you, live in a world where I don't see the massive difference that my own little lifestyle choices are going to make to the bigger picture. But that's not the point, because you can't argue with the fact that we should be using it less. We should be recognising that it's a diminishing resource, and therefore we need alternatives. And then you bring into the conversation the even more salient fact that when wars happen, when Vladimir Putin invades Ukraine, or when Donald Trump attacks Iran, it hits us so hard because of our reliance on fossil fuels. And that's really what I want to talk about. Why is this conversation so controversial? What explains for you the fact that something so blindingly obvious is so debatable in Britain? I've seen worries expressed that the net zero debate will be turned into the next Brexit, which means that the people, if it goes the same way that Brexit went, it means that the people who lie and don't understand anything and are doing the bidding of big business, or not even big business, but just of wealth, will win. And the people who do understand things, and the people who do care about the country, and the people who do have the welfare of their fellow citizens first and foremost in their minds, will lose. And you'd think, wouldn't you, that we'd learned our lessons of Brexit. But we haven't. I mean, Nigel Farage is still leading in most opinion polls. I think all opinion polls. So we haven't learned any lessons of Brexit in one very big and obvious way. But why is it even, what's the word that I want? Controversial doesn't quite work. Okay, here it is. I live in a country, right, where the suggestion that moving as quickly as we can towards energy security and energy self-sufficiency is politically controversial. And I want you to tell me why. Because, and this is why I stress the fact that I'm not an arch environmentalist. I'm not thick. I hope you'd agree with that. Of course, if you disagree, 0345-6060973 is the number you need. I'm not thick, and I pay quite a lot of attention to what's going on in the world. It's my job. And I do understand some of the engines of influence that come into play here, and you know, the kind of people that donate to certain politicians and their interest in keeping these taps on. But how can they be so powerful and successful that to suggest that this country, our home, should become self-sufficient in terms of energy and secure in terms of world events, that the idea that that is even an argument genuinely baffles me. And I want you today to tell me why it is even an argument, all right? 0345-6060973 is the number that you need. Because, you know, the wind ain't going to stop. The sun will always shine. Water will always flow from higher spaces to lower spaces. Harnessing the energy that is infinite and eternal seems to me to be an effort and a target, an aim, an ambition of such ineffable obviousness that the fact that even these words can be construed as controversial or argumentative genuinely baffles me. And the wars, the two wars that we've seen in the last 5 years, have demonstrated beyond any argument, beyond any debate, that being reliant upon fossil fuels is to our lasting and profound detriment. So why are moves, why are calls, why is the ambition to become self-sufficient and secure controversial? Why is it so controversial? Now, I want you to start from a position of complete ignorance. Don't hold back from explaining your answer to this question on the grounds that you think everybody else knows it, because we obviously don't. If everybody else knew the obvious answers to this question, then it wouldn't be a question, would it? We wouldn't be having debates. It wouldn't be controversial. You wouldn't have prominent politicians taking massive donations from climate change deniers and then insisting that we should do more. We should build up our reliance on fossil fuels. I don't know what else is on the list. We'd go for Trump derangement syndrome, don't blame the bankers, phrases that really stupid people use to disguise the fact that they understand nothing. Drill baby drill has become the latest example of that. So it is as if you sort of turn your brain off and stop thinking about things. and you just shout meaningless slogans. Brexit means Brexit. That's a brilliant one, isn't it? You just shout meaningless slogans and claim that you love it because it's hurting all the right people. Maybe Drill Baby Drill doesn't deserve to be on that list, but it's extraordinary how often the people that use that phrase will also use phrases like Brexit means Brexit or don't blame the bankers. So why? Why is it not the single biggest priority of any government, but we'll start with this, of our government, and a priority and ambition shared by the public? Sovereignty. That's a great point made by Craig, who's on the Isle of Skye. Do you remember when people claimed that they cared about sovereignty, and then you realise they didn't know what the word meant? It had just become a replacement for Brexit means Brexit, or they need us more than we need them. Sovereignty, energy sovereignty, to be entirely self-sufficient and not reliant on fossil fuels. Why is this not the most obvious thing you've ever heard of? Why is this even an argument? All right? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 60 60 973. I'll take anything you've got. Detail, vibes. Just want to get the longest list possible. Why is this even an argument when the lessons of the last 5 years should be that sovereignty, security and self-sufficiency barely have any downsides? The three S's, four S's if you count self-sufficiency as two. Sovereignty, security, self-sufficiency. How can they be controversial ambitions or politically contentious policies? It's 20 minutes after 10. Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
From the big transformations to the small home improvements, you can feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
22 minutes after 10. And, I mean, you can stick nuclear on the list if you want. This is why I'm stressing the fact that I'm not some sort of, well, I tell you what, but James O'Brien 1.0, old me. I, at this point in the conversation, I'd start using phrases like moosely munching Muppets who knit their own, who make shoes by knitting their own armpit hair. I used to be that person, and I was never an idiot about the environment, but I was condescending and smug about people who were obviously right about things, about the unsustainability of the status quo, about the need for profound change. So you can stick nuclear on the list as well. How can it be even vaguely controversial to have political policies dedicated to what we have this morning christened the four S's? Security in terms of energy, self-sufficiency in terms of not needing to go to anybody else anywhere to meet our energy needs, and the lovely word that actually combines both of these things together. It knits all three under one umbrella. Sovereignty. Absolute sovereignty. Energy sovereignty. Why is this even an argument? Peter is in Stockholm. That's five S's. Stockholm in Sweden. Flipping X. Security, self-sufficiency, sovereignty, Stockholm, Sweden. It's a shame you're not called Simon. What would you like to say, Peter?
I was about to say. Although I think the Apostle Peter is called Simon or has a brother called Simon.
Yes.
Never mind. Well, I think the way of looking at it, and we've touched upon this so many times in different topics, is that we are actually living in very different realities in terms of what type of narratives we experience. The same facts are explained in completely different ways. And if I may, I think the more important question is, how did we even arrive here?
That's the same question.
Well, I think like this. I think that I thought about this for a long time.
Yes.
The analogy I'd like to use, if you will indulge me, is the following. Imagine we're watching a football game, and us, the people, the public, we're watching. Some of us have really good seats, but most of us will have to rely on the Jumbotron to understand what's going on the pitch.
Yes.
And the Jumbotron shows us different images. I will see that there's been a goal scored or a foul committed, somebody deserves a yellow card, and somebody else will see that actually there's a substitution being made, the other team has scored a goal, and we're debating completely different things. We're not
yes.
actually even watching the same thing. And all the while, we have an arbiter in the middle. Let's call him Donald J. Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And he will, at some point, show a yellow card, a red card, maybe he will allow a goal, and when we debate and scrutinize the event that unfolded, he will just blow the whistle and another event will happen. And we will be so inundated with new events while somebody is scrutinizing that we don't even have the capacity to understand what's going on. So all of us are completely confused as to what is going on. And I think
I think your analysis of the background is correct, but
mm-hmm.
at risk of sort of sounding like I'm about to break into song, when you think about the ineluctable logic of making our energy from eternal and limitless resources, as opposed to digging it out of the ground or sucking it out of the under the sea and burning it. Regardless of how distorting the lenses may be, the fact that it's even in now 50 years, I think about how safer the world would be if we'd done this when we first began to understand the issues. If you go back to Kyoto, I'm sure you're across Kyoto and the desperate attempts back then to keep the world away from safety, security, sovereignty, self-sufficiency. I understand some of what you're saying, but how can any of that explain the objection to or rejection of the idea that we should rely upon things that are infinite as opposed to things that are finite?
I mean, fake news. That's what they will say. Trump and people who follow these type of, who deny science, will say it's all bogus. Tylenol will cause autism.
Yeah.
If you do this, it will cause that. That's complete. I mean, how many things can you think of that are completely false if you just look at science? But they will say that, look, the ice age happened before we had any emissions. So it's just natural that climate changes. This is just a hoax by the liberal elite that wants to control the way of living. They are
and it works because
they can afford to live in their, you know, nice houses, and they don't use a car. They don't think about the working people, us working people. You know, Donald J. Trump included, somehow confusingly, because he was born into wealth. They will just use this type of very emotionally loaded language to make it sound like it's just fake. And always, just don't remember this. I think there is a constant encouragement to stop thinking, to trust your instincts.
Yes.
Or to trust instincts. I think another analogy that I find, they like to confuse common sense with just observations.
Mm.
So it's similar to me saying that, look at the skyline, the horizon, it's flat, therefore the earth must be flat. I mean, it's as if they don't want people to think a step below kind of the service level of anything, and they will always.
Well, we're not yet seeing the engines of tobacco or fossil fuels encouraging us to believe that the Earth is flat. But I understand what you're saying about comparable thought processes. If there was money to be made from convincing the world that the Earth is flat, then we would probably 100%. Be reading Richard Littlejohn columns in the Daily Mail about how he's never been more ashamed to be British than when Keir Starmer insisted that the world is spherical. I get that. And I tell you what you've opened up as well, which other people can rush through the door that you've kicked down, Peter. Why we fall for it. And I say we, not they. I want to keep this honest and I want to keep it fair. Because we don't like being told what to do. So even when I was, not boasting really, because it's hardly something to be proud of, but even when I was talking about cancelling my car, I blamed it on Greta Thunberg. I don't know if you noticed. Even then, so my daughters, who I love, encouraged me to do something that I was proud of them for doing, and I was happy to acquiesce. I was happy to do it. But somewhere in my addled, middle-aged brain, I'm trying to blame it on a young woman. And so it was Greta Thunberg's fault that I have to get the bus to work with all the, the people, all the tube passengers. I don't even get a seat. So we don't like being told what to do on some level. And, of course, politicians like Trump and Farage and a few others have turned that self-damaging, self-sabotaging impulse into political quicksilver. Great start. You can pick up where Peter left off on 0345 6060 973. It's 10:30. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
A cabinet minister has told LBC the option of extending the freeze on fuel duty beyond September remains under review. Emma Reynolds says the Chancellor is keeping a close eye on rising oil prices due to the war in Iran. Police have been given more time to question a man arrested after several people were hit and injured by a car in Derby over the weekend. A 36-year-old was detained in the city centre on Saturday night on suspicion of attempted murder. And the final details of the compensation scheme for drivers missold car finance agreements will be published today. The Financial Conduct Authority previously said that nearly half of all the total deals between 2007 and 2024 were unfair. LBC weather: scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you, that's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine, past storybook castles, or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
The tax year end on April the 5th is approaching, so don't let your 2025-26 tax-free cash ISA allowance go to waste. Make the most of it with a 4.01% rate from Marcus by Goldman Sachs, the five-time Which-recommended savings provider that's backed by over 150 years of Goldman Sachs expertise. Open your Marcus cash ISA at marcus.co.uk. Time's ticking.
Interest rate is 4.01% AER, 3.94% tax-free variable, includes a bonus rate of 0.74% tax-free fixed for the first 12 months. Rate correct as of 5th of March 26.
At Nuffield Health, we're more than just a gym. We're a place to swim and a place to join in. We're a place to work out and a place to spin. We're a place to relax and take it all in. There are so many ways to enjoy being a member of Nuffield Health. With saunas, steam rooms, pools and hundreds of classes, we're more than just a gym. Get more from your membership. Join today at nuffieldhealth.com. Facilities vary. Check locally for details.
Down. This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 33 minutes after 10. I'm going to mispronounce this probably. Everyone, this is from Ian. Everyone needs to Google Lamkate. Have I said that correctly? L-A-M-K-A-T-E? Lamkate. It sounds like one of those compound verbs to describe a celebrity couple, doesn't it? Well, it does to me anyway. Who would be Lamkate? I don't know. To understand how the UK's electricity is generated, today we are running at 72% renewables. This is Ian in Ipswich, a senior electrician. Without Great British Energy, which is, of course, one of this government's first achievements, we would still be running on about 40% gas. Ed Miliband has done a great job. Also, consider that our imports from France went up after Brexit. That would be energy. If you Google Lamkate, you will see a live dashboard of the energy generation sources that we're using in Great Britain at the moment, and Ian's breakdown, I can tell you, is correct. If I turn to the front page of the Metro newspaper this morning, I read that solar sales are going through the roof. Home generator deals are up 62%, because this is one way in which you can insulate yourself at a personal, consumer level from oil and gas rises brought about by having deranged liars waging war in the Middle East, or, of course, deranged liars waging war in Ukraine. Sales are up 62% this month. Inquiries rising by a similar amount. That's according to E.ON. Octopus Energy, their rival, reported a 54% rise in sales. Good Energy said that interest had doubled. So this plays with my conviction stroke confusion about the issue that we're discussing. Why is this even an argument? Part of the problem is, as ever with problems, encapsulated by Cammy Badenoch, who seems to be using this imminent cost of living or unfolding cost of living crisis, particularly with regard to fuel, to try to blame Keir Starmer for the impacts of the war that she said he should be in. And of course, the nature of our media is such that she will be encouraged and allowed to do so. Anybody using the phrase drill, baby, drill gets put in the same, what would you call it? The same section of society containing people who used to shout Brexit means Brexit, or bank, don't blame the bankers, or Donald Trump derangement syndrome. People who don't understand anything, desperately trying to camouflage their own ignorance, or corrupt people doing the bidding of whoever writes the checks, whoever signs the checks. Cammy Badenoch now, their champion, now doing what they want. I'm going to read you a headline in case you think I'm exaggerating. Right? This is a headline from today's Daily Telegraph. Kemi, colon, I'll cut £200 off bills by drilling in North Sea. I'll cut £200 off bills by drilling in North Sea. Now, finally, I think, was it on the BBC yesterday? Finally, an interviewer put her in a position where she would have to account for this claim. It hasn't stopped the Daily Telegraph from sticking it right at the top of page four this morning. I will cut £200 off bills by drilling in North Sea. Spoiler alert, you won't. You can't, and you should know that. Turns out that she quite possibly does.
The drilling isn't going to go directly onto people's bills, no.
So how can the Daily Telegraph still be reporting today that she's going to cut £200 off bills by drilling in the North Sea, when she herself said yesterday, and she said it twice actually, I'm going to treat you today, I'm going to let you listen to it both times. So let us repeat the first one.
The drilling isn't going to go directly onto people's bills, no.
And then let's hear her saying it again, for the avoidance of doubt, because she's not the most reliable of commentators, is she? So, you know, we better double check that she understands what she was saying.
No, I'm not saying that once you drill oil and gas in the North Sea, it's going to go straight onto your bills.
So why is the Daily Telegraph today reporting that she's going to cut £200 off your bills by drilling in the North Sea? Answer, they're playing into the drill, baby, drill rhetoric, beloved of idiots who used to use phrases like Trump derangement syndrome, Brexit means Brexit, or take back control. This is why I get frustrated. Because if you are a Brexiter, or you were, because if you still are, you probably shouldn't be listening to this programme. It'd be bad for your blood pressure. If you still are a Brexiter, take back control was one of the things. This is real. This is actually sovereignty. This is actually taking back control. So how are you being successfully persuaded to be opposed to it? Tavis is in Aberdeen. Tavis, what made you pick up the phone?
G'day, James. How you doing? We've spoken a couple of times in the past on various things.
You're a professor, I think.
I am, yeah. I'm a professor at in Aberdeen. I work on this topic on net zero and just transitions in communities and plants across the UK. So this is my everyday. But I must warn you, the more I know or learn, the more confused I get about the whole thing.
Well, no, that's quite... I mean, that's a sign of honesty and intelligence, isn't it? Because, of course, what we're dealing with is people who don't understand anything and pretend that they're not confused at all. So in many ways, you can be the patron saint of comprehension, attempted comprehension.
Oh, I like that title.
Go on.
Thank you.
That's, you're on.
Can I have that?
Yes.
So there's a couple of kind of angles here. I can dive in and dive out as you please, James, of it. I think the first one is that living in Aberdeen and working here and working in this issue and these debates is that there's a lot of, if you think about the incumbent in any transition, any major societal transition, the incumbent, those who have, you know, have been running the show, those who have the most power and delivering the power, literally, have an important role to play and can resist. There's a lot of cultural, political and economic capital in the oil and gas industry. And I think that's why you see the political economy of it playing out as it is, because it's a very sensitive issue in Aberdeen. You get a lot of support for the industry, but it also then gets into this wider debate about, you know, the future of the country, and that attracts that polarized Brexiteer type debates, right, about oil and gas.
Yes.
So the incumbent has there's still a lot of cultural and economic and political capital in the oil and gas industry. And it's flexing that. And any trans, I think we know more, if I can zoom out a bit more widely though, they've lost the argument on the cost of living and the price and the cost of energy. That argument is lost. But that argument is now playing out in terms of two things, jobs and tax. And that's where it's kind of shifted to. I see in the various debates about it. But the argument on security is being lost. And what you said, the three S's, the four S's, like another S actually, sustainability is a really important S as well, because cost reductions in bills, cost of living things, our high street and our jobs in our communities and our places will be delivered by upscaling renewables across the economy. And we have the evidence for that. It's a no-win argument.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth, actually. You said a no-win argument. I was going to say it is blindingly obvious. It is blindingly obvious that we would be better off in every measurable way if we were not dependent upon things that are expensive, often shipped across the world from overseas, and running out and depleting.
Yep.
And incredibly vulnerable to things like wars being raged by deranged idiots.
It's crazy, right?
Yes, it is crazy, and yet here we are.
But you can see, one of the questions is, how do we deal with the existing oil and gas resource, the limited and declining oil and gas resource? How do we use that? And a lot of the debate is about, you know, do you max out what you have, or do you stop exploration as a current policy for the government? That's where a lot of the debate is happening, at that sharp edge. But it will not solve energy security problems. It will not solve affordability problems. And I'm actually increasingly skeptical about the jobs and the tax arguments as well.
Yeah, I mean, the world has less oil than ever before, obviously. Therefore, we need to use less to account for that. And the arguments that you're describing are about whether or not they're going to bring down the price of petrol by a fraction for a short amount of time, while the bigger picture is allowed to continue unfolding in such a ridiculous fashion.
And the opposite side of what you said just, James, you said the world has less oil, and that is correct in terms of the supply, but there's the other side of the scientific argument. There is actually too much oil out there at the moment to keep us under, we're going to breach 1.5, we'll probably breach 2 degrees, and that's where the real social, environmental and economic disasters will start happening and are starting to happen. So
you're absolutely right. And that speaks directly, of course, to the question of whether or not we should maximise resources while also moving towards net zero, or moving towards sustainability. Yes. I said they should call it that, because they've managed to turn net zero into a dirty word, right? Like they did with
it
European
has.
Union
become
or
toxified.
Human
yeah,
rights.
We wrote a report about it, a paper about it a couple of weeks ago, which is publicly available and called Stick and Twist, and it's about, well, the net zero language has got us this far, and it's been quite successful. We decarbonized half the economy, particularly around power production, getting rid of coal and putting renewables on. It's really successful. But the future bit, the next 20 years, the really hard yards where we have to deal with people's social values and behaviors and households, that's the hard bit. And using the net zero language isn't really working. We need to find a new way of
Well, we should go with the S's. Let's do the S's,
I'm,
man.
I'm sold, mate. It's brilliant.
Sovereignty,
brilliant.
Sustainability, security and self-sufficiency.
Yeah. Do you want to come work for me?
I've got all the S's. I don't know if you can afford me, Tavis. what about this story here? Just your professional reaction to it about the solar panel sales and home generator sales going through the roof. And it shows that people are actually cutting through the noise that people like I have to deal with because it's my job, but normal people, and the numbers might be impressive, but they are still percentages. So, you know, doubling a relatively small start is not that significant. But it does rather suggest that people are seeing through the noise and making decisions for themselves based upon the facts and the science.
Yeah, you're seeing, and again, it's kind of how you kind of introduced this, that you're not necessarily an environmentalist like I am, but it's money talks in a lot of ways. So that increase in sales is mirroring a decrease in the cost of solar panels, a decrease in the cost of batteries, the accessibility of information on how to do it. And you're seeing a real strong response from people, households in these growing areas. There are now almost 1 million green jobs in the UK, about 950,000. Inverted commas, green jobs in the UK.
And that can only go up.
They will only go up. They will only go up and keep rising. And it's assuring how we can then really make this a democratic process, get the jobs out there and have the benefits in communities, not the benefits captured necessarily by the incumbents.
The incumbents, all about the incumbents. You're brilliant, you are. And thank you. I'm so glad you really are. Because you've also reminded me of some of the recurring themes that we're talking about here. Because if you talk about a government that is not favoured by the oligarchs, that is not dedicated to protecting the wealth of the super rich and using the media that they own to encourage us all to blame foreigners for the inequalities and the unhappinesses that we endure, it's getting the message out there that's the problem. You've got your so-called think tanks, which are really just lobby groups who won't tell you who pays their bills because it's going to be tobacco companies and fossil fuel companies. And then you've got right-wing politicians who are either too thick to understand what they're talking about or in the pockets of the kind of interest that we're discussing. And then, of course, you've got the media being dominated by people who will just do the bidding of the wealth of the owners of the fossil fuel companies, but they probably don't even understand why. They just think that that's what their job is. And then the people doing what you do, the platform you have is infinitesimal in comparison to the platforms that they have. And even if you got on the BBC, you'd have to argue with, I don't know, probably Andrea Leadsom or some absolute midwit about the subject that you've dedicated your entire life to studying, but here's 30p Lee Anderson to tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah, that's happened a few times.
I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. And of course, all of this makes sense. I don't know what you're doing. Thank you, Tavis. As you listen to this, I don't know whether you think, oh, flipping heck, he's right, isn't he? Because, of course, the people that we need to reach are the people that subscribe to phrases like Brexit means Brexit, let's go WTO, don't blame the bankers, drill, baby, drill, take back control, Trump derangement syndrome, and now here we are again. Here we are again. And you just need Michael Gove to pop up and say, well, I think we've all had enough of experts, haven't we? Which is how you deal with people like Tavis. Either that or you book him on Newsnight and stick 30p Lee or not Newsnight. That's not fair on the team down there. That was true when I worked there. But now you book him for the BBC. Trevor Phillips on Sky yesterday. It's got Bridget Phillips in there. They're talking about a 1p rise in fuel duty that may or may not come round next September. Absolutely ridiculous. Jill Rutter, who is a brilliant commentator on matters political. She's a senior fellow at the Institute for Government. She pointed out yesterday that it is absolutely stupid, her word, that a major focus of policy response to the Iran war is on the planned 1p rise in fuel duty in September. She said this while watching Trevor Phillips interview Bridget Phillipson on Sky News yesterday. Of no help now to anyone to abandon it. It shows how trivial our political debate has become. And she also points out that more drilling in the North Sea is not a serious short-term response. Making sure that we max out the North Sea could be part of a long-term strategy, but it shouldn't even be part of the discourse at the moment. And what's extraordinary is that even though the headlines still pretend not to understand this, Kemi, says the Daily Telegraph, I'll cut £200 off bills by drilling in North Sea. Kemi Badenoch on television yesterday morning, and this is not something you can say very often, appears to actually understand something.
The drilling isn't going to go directly onto people's bills, no.
It's 10:47.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I suspect there might be a lot of other people who bring forward claims of not dissimilar nature to try and show, too, that these social media sites, the manner in which they are delivered to you, inspires a behaviour that could lead to some very, very disastrous consequences for you. The door is now open to a court deciding that, yes, in this 20-year-old woman's case, was true. The use of social media early made her addicted and her depression worse.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Spring has sprung. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and save 25% at Waitrose. Perhaps a citrusy Lemonette Agave, perfect with halloumi, fresh off the BBQ. Or Esprit de Puisigan with notes of ripe red berry. And maybe go all out with a crisp bottle of Veuve Clicquot champagne. Cheers to spring. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and fizz and save 25%. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores and lines, subject to availability, exclude Scotland box wines and bottles priced £6 or under, £100 or over.
Imagine you. You in a nice comfy seat, with your hands behind your head, taking in the views, instead of taking on the road, maybe even taking a nap. That's the bliss of getting where you need to go without worrying about driving. Book your train journey via avantiwestcoast.co.uk and we'll take you there. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries. See travel differently. T's and C's apply.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50k from April 2026, making tax digital means
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
Young people today, can they really handle responsibility? Or are we just kidding ourselves?
McDonald's.
Some think young people can't manage. We disagree. That's why one in three McDonald's managers are under 25.
Hey, Kira.
Hey, girl. How are you?
Right? Yeah, I'm good. It's busy out there, though.
Like Kira from South London. She's 23 and manages a team of 20.
Let's go.
Leadership. Making it happen at McDonald's.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK. So we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
James O'Brien on LBC.
Is it feudal, do you think? Do you ever look at the world and think, goodness me, if only we could get rid of the cap doffing and the forelock tugging, then everybody would be better off, except the monarchs and the earls and the dukes. I mean that metaphorically, not literally, by way of title. I mean, it would have been true 500-600 years ago that there was a titular identity to the people who were just laughing all the way to the bank. But is it feudal? So you look at people sometimes and you think, how can you be missing so much with regard to the environmental conversation? How can you be parroting Donald Trump's idiocy when he says, drill, baby, drill? Do you not have any understanding of the most basic tenets of both science and humanity? And you think it's feudal. You notice this. You see it with people like Elon Musk. There's a sense, isn't there? And I guess we just split the population according to people who suffer from this syndrome and people who don't. There's a sense that if someone has got a lot of money, they must be possessed of other attributes. If someone has got a lot of money, whether they made it or inherited it, then they must be worth listening to, or they must be decent. There's a great piece on, is it Mother Jones? Is there a website called, is there a media platform called Mother Jones? I was reading about Epstein at the week. That's a brilliant piece on Epstein, published a couple of years ago, actually. And it's about what you might describe as the fetishization of wealth. And the way in which we think that if someone's got a ton of money, then they must be possessed of other skills. It's not true. I mean, if ever there was a man who could prove that having a ton of money is not an indication of personal qualities or even intellectual gifts, it would be Elon Musk, right? But look at all the other ones as well. So if you do what I do for a living, and you're minded to start parroting the lines of the fossil fuel lobby, you're not getting a check off them. You're not actually, but you are fetishizing wealth. You're so enthralled to wealth. You're so humbled. You're so sort of emasculated by other people's great wealth that you think it's your job to side with them. And the population is full of these people. So you do what I do for a living, and you come out shilling for great wealth, even though you don't have great wealth, then, you know, you're getting paid, it's a living. But it's the ordinary people. But Brexit is a brilliant example of this. A brilliant example of it. When ordinary people go, yeah, I'm with the rich people, me. I'm with the rich people. And it's feudal. It explains why we've never really had a revolution in this country. It explains almost all public discourse. Why do you think they're putting so much effort at the moment into making you hate foreigners in general and Muslims in particular? Answer, because if we actually woke up to the reality of wealth distribution, inequality and the cost of living, there'd be a revolution. I came close in my lifetime during the, what was it called? The Occupy Wall Street movement. I have a pet theory. It's probably a conspiracy theory. And I haven't actually checked the dates closely enough. But I think that the resurgence in racism in Western media, obviously it was driven in part by the September the 11th terror attacks. But I think it was also driven by a terror of what the Occupy Wall Street movement represented and the way in which ordinary people were beginning to really articulate the idea that no one should be as rich as Elon Musk. Full stop. Next question. No one, ever. It's ridiculous. People sleeping on the streets outside, and there's some people who are going to make more money in the next 30 seconds than you're going to make in your entire life. And you're on their side. That's the bit. That's my life, really. That's my politics. It's my job, just pointing it out. Never going to fix it. But as long as you keep pointing it out, then maybe we can keep the worst consequences of the fetishization of wealth and the servicing of wealth by the media, largely owned these days by wealth. We can keep the worst impacts at bay. It's mad, right? And now it's net zero. That's the next thing you're going to be persuaded is your enemy, even though it's the opposite of your enemy. Sustainability, self-sufficiency, security and sovereignty, all in the arena of fuel, improves your life in every imaginable way. But here's some clown from Tufton Street, a Tory politician and Nigel Farage to tell you that net zero is actually your enemy. And here's some idiot parroting Donald Trump by bellowing drill baby drill every day. Leave means leave. Yeah, right, of course it does. Leaves means nothing. Drill, baby, drill. Just full stop, don't ask me any questions. It's mad, right? Daniel's in Aberdeen. Look at that, you wait ages for a call from Aberdeen and then two come along at once. Appropriately enough, given what we're discussing. Daniel, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Nice to speak to you. I'm in the industry, so bit of a personal connection here. So first and foremost, it's resistance to change in sort of a broad kind of level. And what's driving that? You know, certainly over the last few decades, we've been pulling in sort of this American kind of perception of freedom, and I think that's got quite a lot to do with this from a public perspective, whereby, you know, nobody likes to be forced or feeling like they're forced into something. You hit on it earlier on.
I buy that.
So also there's sort of long-term distrust has been...
But it's very carefully cultivated as well, because you force me into being better off, you force me into being safer, you force me into being secure, then I'm probably not going to resist in the same way that I am if you tell me that you're someone tells me that you're forcing me to give up my car, or you're forcing me to buy a bicycle, or you're forcing me... Do you see what I mean? It can be the same proposition, but it is going to depend in large part on who is dominating the discourse.
Absolutely. So the other thing to be mindful of, you know, is how gas dependent we are in this country, and we're kind of unique in that respect. So you know, power generation is generating electricity predominantly. I know that's an obvious statement.
Sure.
But most of our houses are heated by gas. So unless we change sort of the housing infrastructure towards more electricity, heating, i.e. things like heat pumps, etc., then that's how we transition away. But if you look back again, sort of 10, 15, 20 years of the discourse around, say, air source heat pumps, you know, you'll read lots and lots about, oh, they don't heat your house properly, they don't work in the cold, they cost this amount of money, they're not actually cheaper to run, etc., alongside things like cavity wall insulation, whereby, you know, people say, well, don't get that done because your house needs to breathe and you'll end up with mold. All of this has been circulating for many decades.
Yes.
You know, the other thing, and a gentleman earlier when we were speaking, you know, tax revenues, you know, definitely get cited. There's a fear that, you know, you stop drilling and tax revenues will go down. Industry employment, there's sort of plus or minus 200,000 people employed in the supply chain in the industry. You know, where do those jobs go?
These are valid arguments, and they don't get anything like the airtime that the invalid arguments get.
Absolutely, right? So, yeah. So one thing, just a couple of last things, because I'm conscious of time, what we see in the industry. So we often deal in extremes in public discourse, right? But the term energy transition is what it's called in the industry. And that has been spoken about as long as I've worked in it, which is a long time now. The choice isn't renewables or oil and gas. The choice is transitioning to renewables from oil and gas. The decision is when, right?
And how fast it goes. And you're absolutely right. And of course, I mean, China, often cited during these debates by people who don't understand much, is riding both horses at the same time on an extraordinary scale. And I don't think we would want to endorse that path necessarily. Mm-hmm. But no one is suggesting that you shut all the... historically, briefly... Because you've just reminded me of something I read last week, and I can't remember whether I mentioned it, and it's about why we are more vulnerable in the United Kingdom to the events in Iran than almost any other country, economically, obviously not militarily. And it is because of our very, very heavy reliance on gas compared to other comparable economies. What is the historical explanation for that, just out of interest, if you know?
I don't know, James.
No, nor do I.
I'd be lying if I told you.
Look at that. You're never going to get a job in Nigel Farage's outfit if you're going to admit that you don't understand things.
Couple of last things
We're out of time. Can you do it in 30 seconds?
I can.
Go on, then.
So it's said on the radio often that it doesn't change the price. Oil prices global, it's off Brent crude or West Texas Intermediate. Please put more focus on the fact that gas prices driven predominantly local through MBP. Okay, so it's very, very disingenuous to say that both oil and gas are driven from a global price, because that's absolutely not true.
Well, I'll never catch on, but an absolute cavalcade of expertise on the programme this morning. And, of course, that's the enemy of the rhetoric. That's the enemy of what fossil fuel companies pay Tufton Street think tanks to do. And, of course, apart from this programme, you'll find a spokesman from one of those think tanks popping up to contribute to this debate with absolutely no understanding or expertise before the day is out, I suspect. It's 11:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a cabinet minister has told LBC the option of extending the freeze on fuel duty beyond September remains under review. The price of Brent crude has risen sharply due to the Iran war and is currently sitting at around $115 a barrel. Sir Keir Starmer is due to meet energy and business leaders in Downing Street later to discuss the economic impact of the conflict. The Environment Secretary Emma Reynolds was asked on LBC earlier today why the government hasn't followed other countries in cutting VAT free on petrol and diesel.
Look, the Chancellor keeps these things under review. You'll have heard that she made a statement last week in Parliament. We are meeting as a government through COBRA and continue to meet to discuss how we can help people. We're keeping a very close eye on the situation. Energy supplies remain stable, but you're right, some of the prices are up.
Police have been given more time to question a man arrested after several people were hit and injured by a car in Derby. A 36-year-old was detained in the city centre on Saturday night on suspicion of attempted murder. LBC's Midlands reporter George Ike has more details.
Five of those seven people seriously injured on Friargate in Derby are still in hospital. Two people have been discharged. A man is still being questioned by detectives at this time. And we are also told that a gold meeting is about to begin at Derbyshire Police, where the Gold Commander will work out the strategic response to move forward with this investigation. And we're expecting an update in a little while.
The Foreign Office says it's completely unacceptable for Russia to expel a British diplomat they've accused of spying. The UK government says it doesn't stand for intimidation of embassy staff and their families. Russian security and intelligence agencies claim the unnamed official tried to gather information about the country's economy. NHS figures show the number of people seeking help for body dysmorphia in England has risen by almost two-thirds in the last 3 years. Health officials say social media is largely to blame for unrealistic body expectations. And the final details of the compensation scheme for drivers' missold car finance agreements will be published today. The Financial Conduct Authority has previously said that around 14 million deals between 2007 and 2024 were unfair. Average payouts are expected to be around £700 per agreement. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 55 points at 10,055. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Sorry for the voice note, but can we get a takeaway tonight, Mum?
Oh, no, no. We've got leftovers in the fridge. They'll do. It'd be nice.
Sorry. I've eaten it. Who's for pizza?
Pizza!
Sure, we can give you lots of data, but what really matters is friends and family. That's why we're happy to be your second most important network. Tesco Mobile. It pays to be connected. Terms apply. See tescomobile.com/ytescomobile.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 11. A change of pace now, complete change of focus. And we do something that I think is almost once in a decade occurrence. We're taking a story from the Sun newspaper. It still exists. Did you know that? And we are looking at their front page story, which is statistically sound, albeit that there are some fairly comical elements to it. And it is about the failure to solve burglaries. In fact, a 92% failure to solve burglaries. There may be some wiggle room or some room for analysis in the statistics, in which case feel free to provide it. But you're basically looking at a third of the country in which a police service failed to solve a single burglary. I mean, they ruin this a bit by getting Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp to condemn it, as if the Tories weren't in charge over the decade and a half during which the police were. I remember Theresa May, when she was Home Secretary, speaking to the Police Federation in Manchester and telling them to stop scaremongering about the fact that crimes will increase and be solved less if you reduce the number of police officers. Of all the things that I mention to you on a relatively regular basis on this programme, I think that's one of the ones where I have to just double check that my memory hasn't gone doolally. Did the Home Secretary really stand in front of the Police Federation and accuse them of scaremongering when they warned that if you reduce police numbers, you will reduce crime prevention or crime solution? You will increase crime if there's fewer police. It seems to me to be a fairly logical state of affairs. But I want to take a step back with your help today. And I want to do the why of it. I don't have a graph in front of me. I was born in 1972. I know, it's incredible. It's because I moisturise. But I was born in 1972. And in my mind, right, this is probably a very poor case of in my day-itis. I'm probably suffering from one of the things that I generally condemn others for suffering from. But I haven't got a graph in front of me. I need a graph that shows me, starting in 1970, say, the solution rate, the clear-up rate on burglaries, on housebreaking. So in my mind, if we had been burgled in Kidderminster in the 1970s, in my mind, it would have been solved. But I don't know if that's true or not. And I don't know what the percentage likelihood is of it having been solved in the 1970s. So I sit there and I think to myself, what a wonderful... No, I think to myself, oh, this is awful. Obviously, things are worse now than they were previously, I think. I know, because the measurements are there. And I think that we need to deploy Osborne's razor. Do you know what Osborne's razor is? I love Osborne's razor. Unfortunately, I've forgotten the name of the bloke who invented it. Someone texted it into the programme last week and pointed out that when we're trying to work out why things in this country are in a bit of a mess, very often the best thing you can do is use Osborne's razor. Because the answer will be, as a consequence of policies that were introduced by George Osborne. It's a variation on Occam's razor, which is a Philip of, was it Lucy who came up with the idea? No, Lucy sent in a message saying it's a very clever idea, but it wasn't Lucy who came up with the idea. I love Occam's razor, as you know, that generally, it's a variation on the Sherlock Holmes line about the solution, once you've eliminated the impossible, whatever you are left with, however improbable, must be the truth. But Occam's razor teaches us that the simplest answer to a problem is usually the correct one. The simplest answer to a question, that even in some senses the most obvious answer, is the correct one. And Osborne's razor is turning into a similarly useful tool. I don't know quite why that landed in the way that it did, the use of the word tool during a conversation about George Osborne, but we are where we are. Osborne's razor is a very useful tool with which you can usually work out why things in this country have got worse over the course of the last few years, right? And it will be because, in broad terms, because of austerity, and in specific terms, because of things that George Osborne did before waltzing off over the horizon with, at the last time of counting, 762 highly paid jobs. I don't know, is the short answer. I don't know why things are so bad now, but I am pretty sure that they are a lot worse than what they used to be. And the broad answers, the big answers, the policy-based answers probably do involve Osborne's razor, but I want the kind of street-level answers. I want the police-level answers. And I just want you to tell me why. Because this brings me perilously close to wondering what the police are for. And I say that very cautiously. Because I recognise the importance of our police service. And I know that the job is hard and getting harder. And I know that you get jip from the left and abuse from the right, and I know that it must have been hideous. Thank you to everyone who's reminded me that the phrase Theresa May used was crocodile tears when the police were literally warning her that reducing police numbers was going to have obvious and detrimental effects on police efficiency. I think the officer who just picked up Community Police Officer of the Year that particularly launched into her at that meeting, he warned about the dangers of reducing community policing, and his patch was the next door patch to the area in which the Manchester Arena bomber lived. And his argument before that terror attack took place, his argument was that good community policing can nip problems in the bud. Someone will say, sometimes even a family member or a friend can say, I'm a bit worried about Chummo at number 33. He's gone a bit. So community policing involves a relationship with the community that, for some reason, in recent years, has been denuded and denigrated by Westminster, by politicians. But it's absolutely fundamental to our social contract, isn't it? Just think about this, right? You get burgled. That there are few more traumatic experiences that you can go through than waking up in the middle of the night to realise that there's somebody downstairs. Or coming home from a night out or a day out and discovering that someone has nicked all your stuff, right? Someone has nicked your gear. And you pick up the phone and you ring the number, and until it happens to you, it doesn't matter how many newspaper reports you read or how many statistical analyses you have discovered. Until it happens to you, I think, and listen, correct me if I'm wrong, until it happens, I think we still believe somewhere inside that the police will sort it out. Or at least that they will try. And the sad fact is that they won't. They won't. They definitely won't sort it out. And they probably won't try. And I want to know how we've ended up here. Because you get in, for me, 20 years ago now, I woke up in the night and there was somebody downstairs. There was somebody downstairs handing our goods, our worldly goods, through the window that they'd opened. That's what woke us up, because there was, you know, when a door just, if there's a draft, the door rattles a bit, and it had woken us up. But they were already, they'd already got almost everything that they were going to nick. There was still a little pile of stuff on the sitting room floor next to the open window. So they're handing the stuff through the open window to the fella on the other side. And I mean, I can't really remember it, because you sometimes shut down memories like that, don't you? I remember moments of it. I remember one comical element, which my phone at the time, because we're going back 20 years, had the A-Team as its ringtone. Da, 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 da. And I rang my phone from my wife's phone, or even from the landline. I think we had a landline 20 years ago. But they'd nicked it. So they'd have been driving down the road with all my goods in the back of the car, and the A-Team theme tune would have kicked into that. I like to think that for a minute they thought that B.A. Baracus was about to bang their heads together and rescue all my chattels. But I phoned the police. And I still thought then, and I still sort of think now, they're going to do something. I pay a lot of tax. I don't want to be that man, but I bet that person. But you pay your taxes, right? Unless you live in Dubai. You pay your taxes and you expect something in return. And for me, and this is not a criticism of the police individually, of the people doing the job, because you're going to explain to me why things have ended up where they have ended up. But, you know, if I break my leg, yeah, I expect the NHS to fix it. Partly because of the taxes that we pay. And whether you pay them yourself or not, if you're on your uppers at the moment, I've got you. I've got you covered. My dad paid taxes when I was a kid. So if I broke my leg when I was a kid, we were safe. We were covered. You got the NHS. If my house is on fire, I will dial 999 and the fire service, the fire brigade, will come and put it out. Or they will try. And those men and women will rush into a burning building while the rest of us are rushing out of it. I pay my taxes. I think of other examples of the things that you just see as part of the quid pro quo of taxation and society. I like those examples. I break my leg, the NHS kicks in. My house is on fire, the fire service kicks in. What's the third emergency service? It's the police, right? My house gets burgled, the police come, except that last bit's not true. So I break my leg, the NHS sorts me out. My house catches fire, the fire brigade sorts me out. My house gets burgled, nothing happens. I just want to know why. That's all. Why? How can we have ended up in a country? And politics is obviously a large part of it, but Osborne's razor is in danger of becoming an answer to every question that we ask about the state of the country. I want to know, in kind of almost in operational terms, how can you not be solving a single burglary? I don't want to sort of say, what do you do all day? Because I know you're very busy and you're doing lots of things, and I'm not one of those people that pretends to believe that you spend your life outside burger joint. I met some police officers recently. They're doing a cracking job over in Brentford. You never hear these stories, by the way. I lost my phone. Had I not got it back, I probably would have claimed it had been stolen. As in my own brain. I'd have thought, someone's nicked it. But it fell out of my pocket while I was cycling home. And a Deliveroo driver, did I tell you this at the time? A Deliveroo driver picked it up. I can see it on my Find My, on my wife's Find My, and it's in the McDonald's car park. And then it isn't. And then it's over the road from the... And I'm thinking, well, it's someone's... And that wasn't on my route home. So someone has picked up my phone and gone down to McDonald's. So we're driving down to McDonald's. I'm going to get there. I'm going to ring the phone. I don't have the A-Team theme tune anymore, unfortunately. But if I get there and I ping it and it starts pinging, I'll go up to someone and ask them, excuse me, I think you might have my phone. And as we're driving down there, the phone rings. My wife's phone rings. And it's my phone. It's me on the other end. And a Deliveroo driver, there's a police van parked on the other side of the road from the McDonald's. And they're doing community policing, visibly. Great job. And the delivery driver has given them my phone and said, oh, I just found this on the street back. You're never going to read about that. You're not going to read about that in a dispatch from Dubai by some latter-day lord or lady whore. And the police phoned me up, reunited me with my phone. And that, I don't want this conversation to be about attacking the police. But I just want you to tell me why that hat trick is now impossible. I break my leg, the NHS. My house catches fire, the fire brigade. My house gets burgled, butt kiss. Nada. Nothing. Dipota. So, look, I might be out of touch. I might be suffering from in-my-day-itis. It might be that if it had happened in the 1970s in Kidderminster, the same result would have been experienced. They wouldn't have solved it then. But your house gets burgled. I'm not telling you how much tax I pay. More than that. No, more than that. High up! Turning into Bruce Forsyth. And if my house gets burgled, like it was 20 years ago, that's it! So some arguments will be sensible. It's because of the insurance and there's no point. No one is in danger. We have to dedicate our... But I want to hear them all, like we did in the last hour. I want them all. How have we ended up living in a country where, if your house gets burgled, literally nothing will be done about it? I want to know, was it always like this? When did the rot set in? And I don't think I want to ask whether or not there's any way we can turn this oil tanker around, because I think we all know the answer to that. Why is burglary no longer taken seriously by the British police? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. I break my leg, the NHS. Washing machine catches fire, the fire brigade. House gets burgled. Sorry, mate, you're on your own. How did that happen? Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Chase is the digital bank that gives you 1% cash back on groceries.
So can I get cash back on cake mix?
Indeed.
And icing?
Yep.
And sprinkles?
Sure.
And candles?
Yeah, and you can turn all that cash back into a nice birthday treat.
How do you know it's my birthday?
Just a hunch. Get 1% cash back on groceries, fuel and everyday transport when you spend with Chase. Search Chase Bank. 18 plus UK residents. 1% cash back on this debit card spending for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Eligibility and exceptions apply. May be changed or withdrawn.
Spring has sprung. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and save 25% at Waitrose. Perhaps a citrusy Lemonette Agave, perfect with halloumi, fresh off the BBQ. Or a Spree de Puisigan with notes of ripe red berry. And maybe go all out with a crisp bottle of Veuve Clicquot Champagne. Cheers to spring. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and fizz and save 25%. Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected stores and lines. Subject to availability. Exclude Scotland box wines and bottles. Price £6 or under, £100 or over.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
22 minutes after 11. Listen, I don't like tabloid journalism. I don't like lazy attempts to provoke an emotional reaction, often in direct contradiction or ignorance of the facts. But this is, I suspect, an exception. Police failed to solve a colossal 92% of burglaries in Britain last year. A Sun investigation reveals today 92% of cases left unsolved. Two questions, really, which is a bit of a miracle considering it took me 25 minutes to ask them. Two questions. Has it always been like this? And working on the presumption that it hasn't, why is it like this now? What's happened? What's changed? What's occurring? Phil's in Westminster. Phil, what would you like to say?
Hi there, James.
Hello.
Yes, I mean, with burglary, I think it's a really horrific crime because your personal space is being invaded.
Yes.
And you should feel safe at home. And so it's really like one of the most horrible crimes, because if you can't go home and shut your door and feel safe, where can you feel safe?
It is a violation. I don't think that's an overused word, to be honest with you. But it is.
Apart from bodily violation,
it's the worst thing that you can imagine as a citizen.
Yeah, and you think, you know, despite what might have gone missing, have they gone through my clothes?
Yeah.
Have they done this and so forth? So when I joined in 2010 in the force, I thought, you know, I was naive. I'd be walking down the road, I'd see a burglar at some point, and I'd be able to stop that. And of course, they see the uniform.
Yeah.
You know, so that never happened.
Tell me about the moment you realised that is not what you were going to be doing.
Well, I was walking. I was doing the beat because I was on Safer Neighbourhoods.
Yeah.
Before they got cut to smithereens.
Yeah.
But you know, it's. I thought, yeah, I'm in a uniform with a big hat. You know, they're going to see me a mile off. And I think they probably wait up in cars. You know, look around a bit, and when they get the opportunity, and of course they're doing it. Most of them are when people have gone to work. They're
yeah.
During the day. They're sneaking in the back, and they're wearing gloves. I mean, we haven't got any kind of rocket science to solve burglaries. They're wearing gloves. So if there's CCTV and we get a face picture, that gets circulated. And so sometimes people get, suspects get recognised because of that. But, you know, they've got their gloves on, and they know exactly about forensics these days. So if there's no...
So these are answers to the questions about what's changed. And it is that the burglaries are committed in a way that makes detection almost impossible.
Yeah, so your best chance of catching a burglar is when there's what's called suspects on. So if a neighbour calls up and says, oh, I've just seen someone climb into my neighbour's window, then that's classed as suspects on. We'll send that put that as an I call emergency, send them round quick. But that's so rare. So rare that you get that. And it's after the event. So you said about fire engines and ambulances and so when the fire engine gets out, the fire's still there. When the police get there, the burglar's not there.
And you have to prioritise safety of humans. And if there is no one on the scene, then there is no one at risk. And although it offends our sensibilities and it feels like a breach of the social contract, if I was given the choice between you hot-footing it round to my own house shortly after I've discovered a burglary, or you hot-footing it around to the scene of a crime that is still unfolding or someone is at risk of being hurt, then I would obviously want you to go to the second crime, not the first crime. And yet here we are. I'm sure it didn't used to be like this.
But, you know, I mean, you did have scenes of crime officers that they go around. And so where there's forensic possibilities, they are the main person you need to attend. Because after it's happened, you know, the person comes home 5 hours after they've been burgled, call the police. You know, we can take the report and so
And again, in terms of resources, the other thing that surprised me was that they didn't put more effort into finding my stuff, you know. But so you might want to attend local car boot sales or something like that. And I said, well, shouldn't you be doing that? And then, really, should you? I mean, it is a weird one, isn't it? Because the golf...
No, you know, please get the car boot sales.
I know, and then you'd end up in the Daily Mail getting into trouble for being at a car boot sale, wouldn't you? Especially if you stopped for a sandwich.
Lazy coppers browsing car boot sales.
And eating sandwiches. He's that bloke over there's just bought a sausage. This is outrageous. Thank you. Okay. That's part of an answer to question two. I'm still interested in question one. So Kidderminster, the 1970s, if our house had been turned over on Hercott Road, I drove past it the other day, if that house had been turned over, would the police have done anything different from what they do now? Have we just seen a slow decline in these kind of numbers, partly as a consequence of, I don't know, as a consequence of what? Emily's in Oxford. Emily, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, good morning, first-time caller, very nervous.
It's only me.
Only you, and very animated about policing. But I must admit, I don't want to come across as, in my day, I left the police 3 years ago.
Okay.
But obviously, you've asked a question I think I can actually answer.
Go on.
And you're asking, what was it like? Has it always been that we've never caught burglars? I used to catch over my time, burglars in the act all the time.
Right.
So I joined in the 90s, and particularly overnight, we had enough staff. We'd have staff to do with the response, and we'd have staff to go out, be in the hot spots of where burglaries are happening, stop check people that were in the area, and if we get a call that there'd been a burglary, we'd swamp the area, and we would catch them in the act or a damn street hiding under a bush. I've caught people climbing in a window. I've caught people climbing out a window. I've caught people hiding behind the doors. I've climbed in through the window and found them hiding behind a door. And for me, the decline is all about austerity from about, 2010. Oh. The cutbacks in policing,
Well, hang on a cotton picking minute, Emily, because Shadow Home Secretary Chris Phelps said that this is totally unacceptable and demanded that Labour get a grip.
I spent years being frustrated about the cutbacks, which, people have said it, and I was annoyed with the police bosses because they just say yes to the government, whereas all the officers and staff, on the ground can see the cutbacks. I used to have people crying because they couldn't do their job properly.
What, actual officers?
Yeah, and police staff, because this is everyone, obviously, I think you're
asking. This isn't what I joined for. This isn't what I do.
Yeah,
that's why I come to work.
Because the public are like, you don't turn up, and they're like, we want to, but
we can't. It saps morale, and it attacks job satisfaction. It makes you more likely to retire earlier or to look for something else to do.
Yeah, people break, they leave, and now with the pay and everything. So, I would say that there's a lot of staff out there who are totally committed to their job.
I know there are.
They struggle to deliver, there's no other way around it.
Do they get recorded differently? Because there's going to be a little bit of statistical mischief at play here. What you haven't really addressed is the question of whether or not, if you knew that the culprits, the miscreants, the perpetrators were no longer on the scene, then you would not be bowling around there at 100 miles an hour, would you?
Well, I have to say, I don't, because I was on the burglary team several years. And it's not always you have to be there at sea. If it's happening there and then and you can catch them, that's amazing. That's
amazing. But how often did you solve burglaries after the event, as it were?
Yes, so quite often. And it's okay for scenes of crime. And yes, you might not get someone there straight away. But if you can get scenes of crime there to do their job, they will do it. And then what that will then be is part of the picture where there's I used to be a dedicated officer for a set area. And I would review and scrutinise, and I'm sure this still happens in the morning, people will scrutinise every burglary in the area. And they will have a good off people will know who that person is or have a likely idea who's done that crime, because burglars aren't that complicated,
Literally, you're talking about hours in the day then, really? Just that bodies on the ground and hours in the day?
Hours in the day to scrutinise everything, to understand it, get a pattern, work on it, and over time you will get that person,
This is what is so unfair about it all, is that you and your colleagues get the blame when you know that it's the politics that has created this situation. I'm thinking back, it was in May of 2025, so it's nearly the 10th, May of 2015, so it's nearly the 11th anniversary of Theresa May standing in front of the Police Federation. Using the phrase crying wolf, telling your colleagues that they had to stop crying wolf about warnings that the impact of budget cuts would have on policing. She accused them of scaremongering. And you have to presume that she believed it. She somehow believed that reducing police numbers would not reduce police effectiveness.
I think she did, because I used to live in her area.
Did you?
She was an MP, and she was actually very good locally.
Yeah?
But I don't know what happened when she went national. But absolutely, of course it will. You know, yes, you know, I agree. There's always, you know, good to review, restructure, have a focus. And also you've got to be careful of what measures get done, because obviously you don't want skewed behaviour around that. But, yeah, the moment from there and the reductions, you know, you get staff. You don't join the police for an easy job. You join because you want to serve the community.
Crying wolf, though, eh? I mean, that's extraordinary, isn't it? That she'd have the audacity to stand in front of a room full of police officers and tell them that they should just shut up and wind their necks in.
My husband was there, and it's a good job he's not on the phone, because he would be a little bit more vocal than me about it, because he couldn't believe it, because we're not stupid people. We're committed to serving the community and making everyone feel safe.
I'm very late for the news. I've just noticed. It's all right. It's not your fault. Don't go yet. It's my fault. Is there any way back?
Yeah, absolutely. Neighbourhood policing, support people, get experience, make people stay, make people want to join the police, because it's an amazing career.
Put Emily in charge. She'll be sorted by Christmas. 11:33 is the time. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Business leaders are to meet with Keir Starmer to discuss how the economy is being affected by the war in the Middle East. The Prime Minister is gathering bosses from finance, energy and insurance companies at Downing Street. Police have been given more time to question a man arrested after several people were hit and injured by a car in Derby city centre. A 36-year-old was detained on Saturday night on the suspicion of attempted murder. And the Foreign Office has accused Russia of an aggressive and coordinated campaign of harassment after accusing a British diplomat of spying. The UK has called the claims nonsense. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Whether your dreams are calling you outdoors to reconnect with nature or towards moments of pampering and relaxation to rejuvenate your soul, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Brace the rudder! Raise the sails! Raise the sails!
Captain, an unidentified ship approaching. Over.
Roger that. Wait, is that an Enterprise sales solution?
Reach sales professionals, not professional sailors. With LinkedIn ads, you can target the right people by industry, job title and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. Spend £200 on your first campaign and get a £200 credit for the next one. Go to linkedin.com/lead to claim your offer. Terms and conditions apply.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quaterpillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:36. Do you think we should get the laminator out again? Do you think? We've got one thing laminated so far. I'm going to be very sparing. Eleanor went a bit nuts and laminated some maps, but I don't really understand why. Why did you laminate the maps? Do you know why? We just got a bit excited with the laminator, didn't you? Like a child in a sweet shop. So look, this is what I've got. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see this, or you can go to YouTube later. Why did you laminate a map of the world? Well, but still. And look, I've got a laminated map of Africa as well. And then I've got an alphabetical list of NATO countries with their flags as well. So those are the three things that I didn't ask to be laminated. But my producer, for reasons... I'm not even sure that you know why you laminated them, do you? If we're honest, you just laminate... It's a bit like that guy in Friends. Do you remember? Is it Phoebe's brother who just liked melting things? I said, do you have any hobbies? Was it Phoebe's brother? I think it was Phoebe's brother. And he just liked melting things. So he'd get a lighter... And he'd just melt like a plastic fork or something. Eleanor's a bit like that with the laminating machine that she discovered. Because I wanted this laminated, the Chilcot checklist. The 10 things that prime ministers, governments must do in order to avoid being the next Tony Blair and Iraq. And that is something I have referred to on a few occasions since it was laminated. And I love it. It's brilliant. I'd have to write it out more neatly or type it, but I can't get this laminated until we've completed the list. So it's a list of stupid slogans that stupid people use to disguise their own stupidity when they're dealing with quite difficult political issues, or often actually quite straightforward political issues. So on the list at the moment, we've got in no particular order, let's go WTO. Do you remember that? Sheesh. We've got Brexit means Brexit. It's not all Brexit, don't worry. We've got don't blame the bankers. That was extraordinary. In the immediate aftermath of the international financial crisis caused by bankers, the kind of people who use phrases like Brexit means Brexit or drill baby drill started insisting that you shouldn't blame the bankers. Which brings us to line four, drill baby drill. A phrase currently being used by stupid people to disguise the fact that they're stupid. Or that they're not stupid, but they are fetishizing wealth and doing whatever it is that wealth wants them to do. Take back control. All right, that's Brexity. Trump derangement syndrome. That's a classic example of stupid people deploying a slogan to disguise the fact. Or in fact, on this occasion, to insult the people who understand things. Sadly, I don't see that in my inbox so much anymore. And they need us more than we need them. That's a great one as well, wasn't it? I think David Davis came up with that. David Davis. So that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. If we can get it up to 10, I'll get it. Oh, look at you. You're so excited, aren't you, by the idea of getting back down to the... What floor is it on? Oh, it's in the basement as well. That's amazing. A lovely, lovely bunch of people down in facilities. They keep this ship afloat. They keep this entire building buzzing. But anyway, we found the laminator. Project Fear? Project Fear goes on the list. We've got a lot of... I'd like to have more than 10 to choose from, and then I'll whittle it down to 10. But yeah, Project Fear has to go. You hear someone saying drill baby drill, you can guarantee that they were saying Trump derangement syndrome 6 months ago and Project Fear 10 years ago. We've put together a nice list of things on there. We've had enough of experts, doesn't quite work. This isn't the phone-in. You can WhatsApp it. WhatsApp 0345 6060 973, or you can text 84850. If we get a lovely list of stupid slogans used by stupid people to disguise the fact that they don't understand anything, then we'll get it laminated. And I can then refer to it on a regular basis. Back to the police and the question of why... If I break my leg, I love this. You can tell when I come up with something that I love because I repeat it to the point of you getting really, really bored and tired of hearing me say it. If I break my leg, I phone the NHS and they fix my leg. If my house is on fire, I phone the fire brigade and they come around and try and put it out. If my house gets burgled, I phone the police and bupkis. Nothing. Why? How did this happen? And did it used to be like this? Vicky's in Inverness. Vicky, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello. Hello, can you hear me?
No. Well, I could. I was joking, obviously. If you could hear me say no, then I could hear you, couldn't I?
I'm so sorry. No, I felt compelled to bring in about this. I was in the police between 2001 and 2017.
What were your detective skills like?
I was in for 16 years, and I was actually more frontline.
So hang on, if you'd arrived at a house, and you thought there was a burglary going on, and you shouted up the stairs, "Is there anybody in here?" and I shouted down the stairs, "No," you'd have gone back to the station, would you?
Absolutely, turned around and got away. Hey, look, it's my first time on the radio.
I know, I'm teasing you, and I'm sorry. Carry on.
No, I really felt compelled to ring in about this because I was actually part of the police when Theresa May actually made those comments. I can't even tell you the level of anger, frontline. Yeah. It was just shocking. I was actually on the march. There was a big march in London. I don't know if you remember.
I do, yes.
I was on that. And I was in a rural constabulary at the time. And that was a really big deal for us to go on that march. There was buses put on, and we went on that march. And the level of anger about what she was saying and what we could see that was happening. I was a community beat officer. That is exactly what I did. I worked in and around the community as a frontline officer. I did behind the scenes work. I did some work as a, not as a detective, but wasn't a qualified detective, but I did work with CID and things like that. And I'll tell you what changed from when I joined in 2001 to when I left in 2017. When I joined, frontline staff were in a police station with CID, with detectives. And so you had your CID officers there with you. And they knew who what we would have called nominals were. We knew who those people were. We knew who they were in the community. The community beat officers were out getting intelligence, speaking to people on the estate, speaking to people about what was happening. That information was being fed back in, and we knew who were doing the burglaries. You know, if a burglary was done, we're like, that's going to be one of like two or three people. And by the time I left, you know, it was so detached from community policing. There was nowhere near as many police officers out available to get that intelligence. There was nowhere near the level of community within CID, because CID was centralised. And a lot of those CID officers were taken away to what were like major investigation units or specialist units. So there were less and less frontline detectives actually dealing with the day-to-day things that affected people. And so I left the police for so many reasons. But one of the major reasons I left was the fact that I couldn't serve the public anymore. I wasn't able to actually give that level of service when I joined that made people feel safer, that made them feel like they could rely on their local police service. And it was really demoralizing that we were not able to actually support and help people and get results for them or make them feel safe. And that was a huge thing. And
I can hear it in your voice. I can hear it in your voice still.
I was so
angry. You're 10 years out now almost. Yes.
Yeah. You know, I genuinely think that is a direct result of what Theresa May brought in at that time. And like you say, I didn't even remember that phrase, crying wolf, until you said it.
Yeah.
And the anger that was amongst police at the time when she was saying that. And we were saying, but all of our information comes from these sources that you're ripping out from under our feet. How do you expect us to actually do our job?
Well, I remember the guy who picked up the police, the Community Police Officer of the Year award that year.
Yeah, I remember the interview. I remember it well.
Yeah, and he was literally warning about what would happen if people like him were removed from their local beats. And he was talking about spotting things early in the community and being alerted to things early. And the Manchester Arena bomber lived in the neighbouring constituency, council ward, not even constituency, lived in the neighbouring council. And listen, you never know whether or not anything would have unfolded differently had there still been community police officers in that part of Manchester keeping an eye on the community. But he literally was in the name, I think it's was his name, O'Reilly.
I think where you can go with that is what you do by taking it away is you've taken away the possibility of having that information. So you can't say that they definitely would have found it, but you can say without them, they're definitely not going to.
Yeah. I don't know whether or not it is going to be too little too late, but I was encouraged by Emily's certainty that things could be improved, Vicky. I'm sure you were listening to her call. And the government, in response to this story, remind us that 3,000 neighbourhood officers will be back where they belong on the beat by this spring, and that community local forces will be able to focus more on local crimes like burglary as a consequence of the National Police Service that they're bringing in. So we just have to hope that it does get better. What's extraordinary, because every call I've taken has pointed out the responsibility of the last Tory governments, and in general, and Theresa May's tenure as Home Secretary in particular. What's extraordinary is that the Sun newspaper, Rupert Murdoch's Sun, have this on their front page and then on pages 4 and 5, and the only politician they quote is Chris Philp, who was a member of those governments, trying to blame it all on the current government, when everybody in your world will know that this goes back, 16 years.
It's more than a decade old. And I think, from my point of view, you know, nobody, I don't think anybody would say, if you're going to do a U-turn, you know what, get policing back to where it was, when it actually was in the community. And that's where your information is. Because generally, a lot of people don't want to talk to the police, but the people that do want to talk to the police are the ones that know the police officers by face, by name.
Yeah, no, it's
and,
a really good
point. And the ones that turn up and they say, I know you, I trust you, yeah. I will give you this information because I know it's not going to come back on me and my family, because it will just go into the system and it can be dealt with.
And you know, just listening to you talk, the job sounds more attractive when you describe it in those terms.
The job,
you make the
job,
yeah, I can tell that you did. And what is a job if not the people that you work with?
Whether it's
your colleagues or whether it's your clientele, for want of a better word. If you're in retail, colleagues and customers, if you're on the radio, colleagues and listeners, colleagues and callers. I mean, it is what makes the job.
It absolutely is, you know, and I would never say to anybody, don't go in the police. I loved my time in the police, but I was, for me, I'd run my time after 16 years in the police.
I can believe it. And it'd be a lot like you, who'd probably still be there now if the job hadn't been completely changed while you were in it, if the rug hadn't been tugged from under your feet while you were trying to walk on it. Thank you, Vicky. I'm again a little bit late for the break. I mentioned the Manchester Arena bomber a couple of times because coppers have pointed out, police officers have pointed out to me the resonance of that speech that the Community Police Officer of the Year gave, and the coincidence, for want of a better word, of what was happening in a council ward next door to his, or a beat next door to his at the time. It turns out that Kemi Badenoch has also been talking about the Manchester Arena bombings today, although, as we shall discover shortly with our political editor, Natasha Clark, in a rather less helpful way than we have.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
This is a shameful, this is a shambles.
Straight to the point.
How was that allowed to happen?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Show some evidence, Minister.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
The Paramount Plus spring sale is on, with over 60% off Paramount Plus. Sign up to stream every episode of exclusive shows like the critically acclaimed hit Landman, brand new series The Madison starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and new Yellowstone series Marshals. All for only $2.99 a month, only on Paramount Plus. But hurry, offer ends Tuesday. Standard monthly plan only for eligible customers. Saving when compared to the full regular monthly price. After 2 months, auto renews at $7.99 a month unless cancelled. 18 plus T's and C's apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1, or via post. And for this week only, we're also guaranteeing 5 winners of £20,000 in our bonus draw. Enter by midnight on Sunday to be in the draw. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary's Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
Spring has sprung. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and save 25% at Waitrose. Perhaps a citrusy lemonette agave, perfect with halloumi, fresh off the BBQ. Or a spree de Puisigan with notes of ripe red berry. And maybe go all out with a crisp bottle of Veuve Clicquot champagne. Cheers to spring. Buy any 6 bottles of wine and fizz and save 25%. Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected stores and lines, subject to availability, exclude Scotland box wines and bottles, price £6 or under £100 or over.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 11:51. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It depends how old you are. Do you worry about your memory a bit? You kind of like can't remember the name of something? And you think, oh, is that because I'm getting old? And you don't really recall that when you were 18, you'd forget things as well. But I said, I think that copper was called O'Reilly. I'm pretty sure the police, the community police officer who tore a strip off Theresa May, it was in Bournemouth, the Federation Conference, not Manchester. He was from Manchester. He was from Gorton, actually. Gorton and Denton being the parliamentary constituency. He was called Damien O'Reilly, and he literally addressed the possible radicalisation of teens. He talked about national security in the context of community policing. And you might struggle to see the link at first glance, but when you stop to think about it, it makes perfect sense. The relationship between community policing and national security is all about teenagers getting radicalised and nobody really in the community being able to do anything about it because they don't have a personal relationship with police officers. And then, so that's going back to 2015. If you fast forward just a couple of years to 2017, you've got a bunch of police officers. You've got a police commander explaining why cuts to community policing make it harder to prevent terror attacks, like London Bridge. This was a brilliant investigation by BuzzFeed. And they described Theresa May as being absolutely loathed for her cuts to police budget. So we're talking about burglary today, but the picture can be much bigger. And for reasons known only to them, The Sun decided to ask Chris Philp for his comments on what 14 years of Tories did to the police force. Hey-ho, on we go. And it is to the Tories that we turn next, because I'm not the only one, Natasha Clark, who has been remembering the Manchester Arena terror attack today.
Yes, you're right, James. So Labour has today hit out at Kemi Badenoch for what they call drawing false parallels between the Manchester Arena attacks and the mass Muslim prayer event that we saw in Trafalgar Square a few weeks ago, in which we've dedicated probably hours of coverage to the debates that have opened up as a result of some quite controversial comments from Nick Timothy, the Shadow Justice Secretary. And this morning, the Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, has now called on Kemi Badenoch to apologise. She suggested that this is all a freedom of speech issue about those comments from her Shadow Justice Secretary. And of course, the comments from Nick Timothy, huge backlash at the time. He suggested that that mass iftar event in Trafalgar Square was, quote, an act of domination. Sir Keir Starmer called for him to be sacked. Miss Badenoch then defended him. I spoke to her when she was at her own Tory launch a couple of weeks ago, suggesting that men and women should not be segregated in mass public spaces.
Trying to shut Nick Timothy down, get him sacked for saying, I don't like this, I don't think this is right, this is not the proper way to go about things. It is this silencing that causes the real problem.
Okay.
Manchester Arena, security guard doesn't say anything because he thinks, oh, well, we're not allowed to say anything. Mm. Same thing with the grooming gang scandal. People see what happens to MPs like Nick Timothy and think, oh, well, we're probably not allowed to raise concerns. We need to be able to raise concerns. We believe in freedom of religion in this country.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that every cultural practice associated with a religion should be accepted. Well, you know, we want to see Trafalgar Square used for all sorts of festivities, but they need to be inclusive. They need to be things, you know, I've seen Diwali festivals that everybody can go in, everybody's dancing, celebrating, there's no pushing the women out.
I was confused. That's why I interrupted before the clip had started. How on earth do you bring a terror attack at Manchester Arena into a conversation about saying prayers?
It's a very good question. So,
no, but I'm still confused.
Yeah. So, hence why, yeah, I thought it would be good to play that clip in full, because it is an interesting argument that she's coming across, that she's basically saying this is all about freedom of speech, that people felt in the past that they weren't able to speak up about things. Now, I think what she's referring to is at the Manchester Arena inquiry, there was a security guard, his name was Kyle Lawler. Mm. He said he had a bad feeling about the Manchester attacker, but did not approach him for fear of being branded a racist. He said at the time, it's very difficult to define a terrorist. For all I knew, he may well be an innocent Asian male. I did not want people to think I was stereotyping him because of my race. I wanted to get it right and not mess up by overreacting or judging someone of their race. But again, it's a pretty big leap to say that Manchester terror attack and this event that we saw in Trafalgar Square
praying
should be equivocated.
You can't condemn people for praying, or rather, you must be free to condemn people for praying, because a bloke on duty in Manchester that night claimed that he had vibes about a terrorist, but didn't do anything about it because the terrorist was brown. So, thinking of Kemi Badenoch as someone who is terminally online, is this? I mean, there's a famous Stuart Lee routine where you can't say you're English anymore without being arrested. Is this playing into the thing where you can't say anything you want about Muslims anymore without...
I think it's exactly what she's saying.
Wow.
James. Yeah, so...
But they were praying. They were literally saying some prayers.
So she's saying we should have a big mass conversation about mass prayer events and what they look like and whether they should be allowed in public or not. But you are right, James. She's only talking specifically in this instance about Muslim prayer acts. And obviously that's got a huge backlash, not just for Nick Timothy, but for these specific comments.
What did she say about the IDF banning the Cardinal of Jerusalem from celebrating Palm Sunday in one of the holiest Christian sites?
Not put that one to her, shall we?
But surely she's... I mean, Nick Timothy must be absolutely up in arms about this. Even Benjamin Netanyahu had to backtrack when he saw the scale of the international revulsion. The first time in, I mean, one of the most holy Christian sites on the planet, on Palm Sunday, preventing the Cardinal of Jerusalem, who has the most wonderful name, which I can't currently remember, but it's something like Pizza Burger. He was prevented from attending. So they're both going to be, I mean, honest Bob Jenrick will be livid, although he probably still calls it Psalm Sunday instead of Palm Sunday. The bigoted idiot Nick Timothy will be absolutely furious about Catholics being prevented from celebrating one of their holiest days on one of the holiest sites in our church. And Nigel Farage, of course, will be fuming. And Kemi Badenoch must be very cross about this as well.
Yeah, as far as I know, James, she's not made any comment on that so far. She says that we need to basically have a religious commission to look into integration in public life and whether these events should be much more integrated than praying
in the middle of Trafalgar Square.
Yeah, well, you'd think so. But, I mean, the Labour Party have sniffed blood over this, understandably. They've hit out at her comments this morning. Steve Reid, the housing secretary, has told LBC today that for Kemi Badenoch to compare the two is a new low, that she has no shame. He says the majority of Brits, including most Conservatives, will be disgusted by her comments and that Kemi Badenoch should apologise. We also spoke to the Conservative Party to see if they wanted to say anything in response to this criticism, and an aide told us in response that Labour are trying to distract from Kemi Badenoch's brilliant new policy to save people £200 on their energy bills. Steve Reid should stop getting upset about everything and sort out his miserable failure on housing.
Well, I can tell you who it appeals to. It appeals to people like Rebecca, who's been in touch to say, shut up, James, this is not a Muslim country. And we can have a look at some of Rebecca's previous messages to LBC. Here's another one. This man is talking rubbish. This is England, a Christian country. We are not a Muslim country. We have no space for Muslims. We don't want your religion. Go pray in a Muslim country, which was no doubt in response to the original story. Here's another one. Trump is correct. You are living your life through rose-tinted glasses. James O'Brien, this country has fallen apart. Sorry, James, but I have loads of love for Susan Hall. So that's who Kemi Badenoch is appealing to with this kind of hateful rhetoric. People like Rebecca, a big Susan Hall fan. It's coming up to 12 noon, and I'm not joking. I can't wait to hear what politicians from the right of British politics, particularly the ones who deploy the meaningless phrase Judeo-Christian values as a euphemism to cover up their hatred of Muslims. I can't wait to hear what they have to say about the Cardinal of Jerusalem being prevented from celebrating in a small mass Palm Sunday for what I reckon must be the first time in centuries. Cardinal Pierre Battista Pizzaballa.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, business leaders are heading to Downing Street to discuss how the economy is being affected by the war in the Middle East. Number 10 says the aim is to hear directly from firms and discuss how ministers and the private sector can work together. Talks are expected to focus on Tehran's blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, which has disrupted global oil supplies. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark has more details.
We're told we will see representatives from Shell, BP, Centrica, the shipping and logistics sector, including a company called Maersk, finance insurance markets, including HSBC, Goldman Sachs and Lloyd's of London as well. That's going to be taking place this afternoon, we understand. But obviously the government are under pressure to say what they will do to try to help keep those costs down.
The talks at Downing Street are taking place after President Trump said he was considering seizing a major Iranian fuel hub. In an interview, Mr. Trump said that his favourite thing is to take Iran's oil. The price of a barrel of Brent crude is currently sitting at around $115 a barrel. The Environment Secretary Emma Reynolds has told LBC that extending the freeze on fuel duty remains under review.
That is in place until September, but we will make decisions around that given what the situation is at the time. But we are also leading international efforts to de-escalate the conflict in the Middle East because obviously of the impact back home, but also the impact of people in the region.
Police have been given more time to question a man arrested after seven people were hit and injured by a car in Derby. A 36-year-old was detained in the city centre on Saturday night on suspicion of attempted murder. The Foreign Office has accused Russia of an aggressive and coordinated campaign of harassment after accusing a British diplomat of spying. Russian security and intelligence services claim the unnamed official tried to gather information about the country's economy. The UK has called the claims nonsense. Details of a compensation scheme will be revealed later for the millions of drivers missold car finance deals. The average payout is expected to be around £700. And the former Brighton manager, Roberto De Zerbi, is reportedly in talks to take over the vacant post at Tottenham Hotspur. The interim boss, Igor Tudor, left his role at Spurs yesterday after only 44 days in charge of the North London club. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 60 points at 10,027. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather. Scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier in the south with sunny spells, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Imagine sweeping through green fields, floating 5 feet above ground. Sun on your face as you slide by, on track to your destination. Not a care in the world, as you simply lean back. And before you know it, you're there. This is how travel should feel. And on our trains, it does. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 12 is the time. I've got a rather splendid missing word round for you today, but I've got a spoiled for choice. On which headline I'm going to use, because there's a few reports of the same story, and I'll try and find it for you in a moment. But we turn our attention next to something rather different. I hope that you don't find it boring when I talk about the changes I've gone through as a human being in the years that we've spent together, or in the years that I've been doing this job. I find transformation eternally fascinating. Almost everything we talk about speaks to transformation in some way, shape or form. All of the most interesting elements of humanity, I think, speak to transformation. So we were just talking about, if you didn't notice, the transformation of the police force in this country into something that most of us would agree is not as good as it used to be, as a consequence, it would seem, of Conservative Party policies. And we talked about the transformation of the world for most of last week in terms of what happens when you put a deranged liar in charge of the United States of America. Answer, absolutely anything. But transformation, things that change. And it would be odd of me to be fascinated by transformation if... the first hour of the programme is about transformation as well. It's about the transition from reliance on fossil fuels to... I turned into Sean Connery again then. Fossil fuels. To a world in which, or a country at least, in which we have all the S's. Sustainability, sovereignty, self-sufficiency, security. All of the things that are available to us if we can wean ourselves off our fossil fuel dependencies. And that's a conversation about transformation. So my own transformation, or my own changes, I talk about them because I hope you're as interested in them as I am in yours. And this is a good example of one, this story. So, I usually use the therapy that I started having a few years ago as the point where some of my transformations took place, but I hope I've had the ability to change my mind long before I found myself in therapy. The number of times that you have persuaded me I was wrong about something just by the quality of your contribution to the programme. I mean, think of this programme as the anti-Gove, if you like. This is the place where experts are always welcome. And sometimes expertise is experience. Sometimes the thing that makes you an expert on something is the fact that you've been there, you've done it, you've got the novelty lunchbox. And I mean, off the top of my head, the things that you changed my mind about would involve relatively trivial things like pet ownership right through to quite serious and important things like the environment. But I used to be one of those people who couldn't quite see the wood for the trees in terms of, and I'm thinking now about education. And I, again, a bit like Michael Gove, oddly, I used to think that if a system was good for me, then that was the right system for the country. I think most of us are probably like that. Ties in a little bit with the conversation that we had in the first hour about how much we hate being told what to do or doing anything differently. We carry a weird legacy from our own past. I don't know whether you've noticed this much. I think about it a little bit, but not as much as I should. There's a sense that if we tell someone, if someone tells us, if I tell you that we shouldn't do things like that, but we used to, you can take away from that a personal affront. You think of it with, for example, jokes. You know, if a joke was absolutely fine in the 1970s or the 1980s, and your child says to you now, or somebody, perhaps a colleague says to you now, that's not, you can't use that word anymore, or we can't make that joke anymore. Well-adjusted normal people would probably respond to, now that's not even fair, because I like to think I'm a well-adjusted normal person. It's as if you're being judged retrospectively and found wanting. So if you made a joke in the 1980s, for example, that you wouldn't make now, that's progress. That's a good thing. But if somebody, particularly sort of up themselves, was hitting you over the head about the fact that you used to make that joke, and they made you feel bad, they made you feel small, then you push back by insisting that you should be able to make that joke today. You see it, sadly, among some comedians who think that it's edgy or controversial to attack certain groups in society, when it's nothing of the sort. It's just Bernard Manning reheated. But I understand where it comes from a punter's point of view. If you tell someone, particularly if it's a young person telling an old person that the way they used to do things is wrong, then the old person will bridle and will push against it. And I think what I'm describing is part of the same process. We used to do it like that, and it didn't do me any harm, so how dare you suggest that we should change it? I wonder if you've got the first idea what subject I'm about to introduce. There's a teacher, he used to run Harrow School, and he's in the news today, and he is talking about how stress, exam stress, is a good thing for teenagers. And I would once have agreed with him. And just so you know where we're going for the phone-in, I still might. But I would once have agreed with him. I would once have talked to you on the radio about how I was one of those people who didn't work all year and faffed about, to use one of my late father's favourite phrases, and somehow discovered an ability to knuckle down for almost the bare minimum needed to do well, not brilliantly, not as well as I could and should have done, but to do well in my exams. And it was obviously stress and adrenaline that focused my mind on those exams. So I was rather partial to Pro Plus. I don't know if you're familiar with Pro Plus. They're like caffeine tablets that I would take to stay up all night revising. And I'd go in and do the exam, and then I'd sort of almost pass out immediately afterwards and sleep until the next round began. And I thrived on the stress. And I carried that into my adult life. When I was a newspaper journalist, I would let things mount up Friday lunchtime. I'd have to write about 4,000 words before I could go home on a Friday. I'd have to write about a 1,500-word interview, a couple of news stories, something for the Sunday paper, something often for the Monday paper because I didn't want to come in on the Sunday. And I could have done a lot of it on the Tuesday or the Wednesday, especially the big... But I just one of those people who almost needed fear to get things done, right? And because it worked for me, and I'm doing finger quotes there, it worked for me, and because it, and I'm doing more finger quotes, that didn't do me any harm. I thought that that was the way things should be for everybody. So I didn't like coursework when it was first introduced, because it seemed to me to discriminate against people like me. What's that? You can work all year round at a nice steady pace and get a better grade than me when I just turn up for 3 days. Absolutely amped up on Pro Plus. That's just so, I mean, what a stupid thing that was. And if you were listening to me back in the day, you'll know that I'm not exaggerating. This is completely true. I had a problem with coursework because it discriminated against people who didn't work all year and turned up on exam season and smashed it. That's insane, right? What do you want from the education system? People like me, who literally do nothing and distract everybody else and are royal pains in the butt. You think the system should reward us for our approach, or should it award the I don't want to say the tortoises, but the people who can do both, who can work all year round, the grafters. There we go, the grafters, as opposed to the peacocks. And I meant it. And I think it was you who made me realise how stupid this was. There were a couple of things. I know everyone's sending me ADHD now, and I understand that. I may or may not seek a diagnosis. I may not have it. I don't know. But obviously a lot of people recognise the behaviour I've just described as being a form of neurodiversity. And, I mean, most recently it's with my books. It's the idea that I've spent the advance, often twice, so that I have no choice but to write the book, even though the amount of time left for me to finish the book is nowhere near enough time. And I somehow do it. I got this stress building up until they get the anxiety and the stress. I get it done, and I wouldn't get it done without the anxiety and the stress. I can feel a new book bubbling away inside me at the moment, and I find that the prospect a little bit terrifying, because I'm going to go through that cycle of stress and anxiety and self-loathing all over again. Why didn't you do it yesterday? Why have you left it all to the last minute? You're ruining a family holiday because you're sitting in your air-conditioned hotel room writing a book when you should be on the beach with your children. All of that is coming back around again. It's almost self-sabotage, except I've never actually sabotaged myself. I've always pulled it off. And I've always pulled it off at the last imaginable moment. You think I'm exaggerating? You should talk to my publisher. The point at which they actually have to tell Waterstones that the book is not going to be on the shelves on the date that they've promised. I'm so close. But I've always pulled it off. So there's a little bit of me that thinks, well, if I did do things better, if I did do things responsibly, if I got diagnosed and I got medicated and I became a normal, fully functioning human being, maybe I wouldn't pull off these triumphs. Maybe I wouldn't get away with it. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. Because I don't know when anxiety is good and when anxiety is bad. We're beyond the GCSE stage now in our family, but this chap, Barnaby Lennon, head teacher of Harrow School for 12 years, is talking about stress being a good thing. Exam stress is a good thing. Telling young people to spend 7 hours a day cramming for their exams this Easter. Talking about GCSEs being competitive. Warning that pupils who do not bother are falling behind. He says all the research shows that year 11s need to revise their notes at least 3 times before the exam. That is only possible if the Easter holidays are used. Sacrificing Easter is not so bad. He says he's been criticised in the past for making life too stressful, but he adds, I know I am right because of the many appreciative letters I have had, often from lazy boys. And I think I might be one of those lazy boys that would have thought that it was doing me good, this cycle of stress and anxiety that I've just described to you. So this isn't a phone-in about neurodiversity. It's not a phone-in about ADHD. I love our phone-ins about ADHD. We'll have more. This is a phone-in about everybody. It's about stress. It's about parents. It's about children. And it's about exams. How much stress is good stress? 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. How much stress is good stress? What is... Can we do that? Can we do that together? And it doesn't just have to be about exams. We can broaden it out much more widely. But do you want to have a go at describing the difference between good stress and bad stress? And I think because it is exam season, because we are in Holy Week now, we are in the Easter holidays, and a lot of young people will be focusing on their exams, and a lot of parents will be walking that tightrope between wanting them to do well, but not wanting them to make themselves ill with worry and stress. I find it almost impossible to get that balance right. Touch wood, we have somehow managed to together over the years. But you don't want to say to your child, in fact, that when one of them was doing their GCSEs, I began to worry we might have been a little bit too successful in de-stressing them. I kind of found myself thinking, I wouldn't mind if you were a little bit more stressed, actually, about these GCSEs. But if you gave me the choice between a kid, I always remember his name, as a kid when I was 13, it's long before public exams, there's a 13-year-old at my prep school who couldn't do exams. He would get sick with worry. And it wasn't because his parents were pushy or because of any particular pressures being put on him. He just went. His anxiety just went off the charts. And being 13-year-olds in 1984, we teased him for it. But I don't know what the difference is between healthy stress and unhealthy stress. And I think it's an interesting question to ask generally, but I think in the context of children and exams and mums and dads and carers, I think it's a really interesting question. Because we're not going to get it right, are we? It's like alchemy, this. Just the right balance. So I want you to be stressed about your exams, but I don't want you to be too stressed. What does that even mean? I don't want you to be stressed at all. Well, then you're not going to do the work, or you're not going to do as much work as you would if you did feel the cold breath of a looming exam on the back of your neck, right? So what's the difference between good stress and bad stress? 0345 6060 973. And how do we do it? How do we do it when our children are in the exam season? I'm not confining the conversation to that. I just think this week it's a particularly interesting focus, because parents, it's kind of our job to manage the stress of our children. As they get older, it becomes their job. But what is the right balance between fear and functionality, or between stress and scholarship? What is the difference between good stress and bad stress? And how does that analysis play into preparing for important exams? I cannot wait to hear you answer these questions, because I find it, as I've told you a few times, I find it absolutely fascinating. And remember, the system has to be utilitarian. It has to be the greater good for the greater number. A system that rewards prats like me is not a good system for the country to have. So what is the relationship between stress and scholarship? 0345 6060 973. It's 12:19.
This is LBC.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Chase is the digital bank that boosts your savings to 4.5% AER variable.
A boost?
Yep. It includes a 2.25% AER boost for the first 12 months.
Are they being boosted now?
All the time. Bedtime, gym time, romantic dinner time. And soon you could boost your way to...
beach time.
Boost your savings with Chase. Search Chase Boosted Saver. 18 plus UK residents. Available to new Chase current account customers for their first 31 days. 4.41% gross interest paid monthly. Eligibility and T's and C's apply.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries. See you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Spring has sprung. Buy any six bottles of wine and save 25% at Waitrose. Perhaps a citrusy Lemonette Agave, perfect with halloumi, fresh off the BBQ. Or a Spree de Puisigan with notes of ripe red berry. And maybe go all out with a crisp bottle of Veuve Clicquot champagne. Cheers to spring. Buy any six bottles of wine and fizz and save 25%. Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected stores and lines, subject to availability, exclude Scotland box wines and bottles, price £6 or under, £100 or over.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, energising a better Britain.
20 minutes after 12 is the time. A former head of Harrow explains today that stress is good for GCSE pupils, and I can see his point, but we all know that there is such a thing as too much stress, and I'm just wondering where that line is, the difference between good stress and bad stress, or the best ways in which to look after children and their relationship with stress as they're preparing for exams. David is in Putney. David, what would you like to say?
Good afternoon. It's all about your ability to strategize and implement a regulation to help you mitigate that stress. That's what I use as a determinant for whether it's a good or a bad stress. So a lot of the time I take it on. So I'm a parent and a tutor as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I do is I'm like, hey, whatever's in your control, that's your game. I'm going to let you control it. But if there is something that you are struggling to regulate with, give that to me and I'm going to take it away, or I'm going to find a way to make it more manageable for you.
Can you speak in examples? Would you mind?
Yeah. So currently I'm doing a lot of exam technique work with my students, and what I'm trying to do is find cool kind of games to kind of show how we can break a question down into a way we can understand it. Because in some questions, they're very wordy and very difficult to conceptualize exactly what the question is asking of you. And so I like to implement games and anagrams to say, well, hey, let's see if we can pick out what we need from this question and just deal with that alone, because we don't want to deal with a full paragraph when all we need is actually just three statements. And then you can answer a question using that. It typically is actually quite good for neurodivergent students to learn that kind of technique, but everybody benefits from that because you're reducing the amount of information and input that is causing the stress.
But this is stress in the context of having a question or a task in front of you.
If we take it to the whole exam season kind of stress, I always say, like, we have to understand what is making you feel better, what is a technical stress reliever, and then what is something that is actually just a bad habit that we are struggling to let go of. Well, here's the thing. What is taking time and energy away from the things that you need to do? You have to be able to be very critical of that, and it's your role as a parent and an educator to be able to say very almost bluntly to your student and to your child, like, hey, this thing, you might like it, but it is taking away a lot of the energy and time that you have to be able to dedicate it to the things that you need to do. I'm very into exercise and I'm always promoting exercise, but I suffered from over-exercising during my exam period when I was younger. And so I'm very deftly aware of when students are using exercise as a form of procrastination, and I will say that to them. I was like, hey, you didn't need to spend an extra hour in the gym. I have degrees in exercise physiology, and I can tell you as an expert, you chose to spend that time, waste that time in the gym when you could have just come home and accepted you needed to put in a couple of extra hours on the books.
But how do you know? How do you know they're not using the exercise to regulate?
Because there's a very large difference between the endorphin response we expect from exercise and the actual cortisol and fatigue response we get from exercise.
Yeah, you don't know that by looking at someone. So I mean, you're saying
I can observe it based on what their exercise regimes are. I mean, as an expert in the field, it's just something I can do, but not everybody can.
Right.
You have to kind of have a very critical understanding of things. And you've also got psychological aspects of it, such as Bandura's self-efficacy model, which is to do with anxiety and arousal.
Just back up a bit. So if a child says to you, I'm really, really stressed, so I went to the gym and now I feel better, and you say to them, no, you don't, because of your skills.
So it's not necessarily like I'll go, oh, you don't feel better. I'm going to
time a minute ago.
No, what I was saying was, I was like, hey, you did feel better, but you stayed in the gym and continue to do something when you didn't need to remain in the gym to do so.
Right.
You felt better and you chose to, instead of taking that feeling and bringing it home and trying to put yourself to work, you stayed in the gym because now you're like, oh, well, if I leave the gym, I'm not going to feel better and I'm actually going to start. So that's the fear component. That's the anxiety. So you have arousal, which is what gets us motivated. And then you have the anxiety, which can sometimes cause a catastrophe. And again, this goes to Bandura's self-efficacy and arousal anxiety state.
Okay. Thank you, mate. Good luck with it. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. So you've got a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old studying for their GCSEs who sadly hasn't got reference to the thing technique, but you want them to be happier, you want them to be healthier. You're the parent. You need some tools right now to help your child be less stressed, but not less stressed to the point that Mike tells a story about. I had a mate, he writes, that was playing frisbee with me in a park, and his dad drove over on the grass. You would remember that if someone's dad actually drove onto the grass while you were in the park, opened the door and shouted, "Colin, school's been on the phone, you're meant to be sitting at O-level." Now, Colin obviously wasn't stressed at all because he'd managed to completely forget his O-level. So you've got a kind of tension between Colin, who was so unstressed that he forgot he had an O-level. You don't want your child to be like that. And then the kid I went to school with, who literally couldn't come into school during exam season and was allowed to do them at home because he was bent double physically with stress. And the normal parent who wants to somehow drive the line between those two extremes wants a little bit of advice from you on 0345 6060973. And it begins, really, with the question of, what's the difference between good stress and bad stress? And I'm not much wiser at 27 minutes after 12 than I was at 12 o'clock. Dave's in Liverpool. Dave, what have you got?
Hey, James.
Hello, mate.
Good stress.
Yeah.
What I've noticed as a teacher of 34 years, right? So good stress looks like when they're 15, 16, they're winding up to the GCSEs and they start to get competitive with each other. And there's an edge, there's a tingle, you can feel it, and we call it the penny drops moment.
Go on.
Okay? So that's quite healthy stress. Those kids...
What if... I mean, and again, there are always going to be, in a marked exam scenario, there are going to be people, there are going to be winners and losers, right? I hate that brutality of that language, but what if you're the...
It's a flawed system, James.
Yeah, it is a flawed system.
Completely.
So this is why I talked about utilitarianism, because it's the greater good for the greater number. And the stress you describe is a utilitarian good, as in it's going to be of benefit to the majority of people, but it's going to be an absolute nightmare for a tiny number of people.
Some of them.
What we have to deal with. We have to accept that.
The bad stress that you've described that we see regularly, where kids just freeze, and this is months before the exam. So my three kids have all been through GCSEs. One of them did them during COVID, so it was complete. They missed out on everything, all sorts of stress. And that had terrible knock-on effects later on.
Yeah.
The middle one did them, and so did the youngest. And she took them last year, and she began to feel the bad stress. And all sorts of mental foibles and issues began to come out. And in the end, when she was at the school I was working at, and I said to the Senko, look, can you do something? They said, yeah, there's stuff we can do. So for parents who are struggling with a kid like that, I'd say, go to the school, see them. It's not too late. And they can do things like, you know, they don't have to do them in a sports hall, for example, or big hall. They can do them, they can have exam breaks so they can, you know, do so much to the exam and come out like that. There's all sorts of things the schools can do now to help with that bad stress. But I've got to say...
And they recognise it. Yeah, go on. What's
you mentioned something before. You mentioned the name Cove. So the cognitive load that man puts on young people today, or has put on with him and Dominic Cummings...
Don't wash your mouth out. I can't say that on this programme. That's a yellow card. Go on.
But, it is absolutely, and you mentioned before about, you know, in my day it worked for me, so it must work for everyone. And I'm sure that was the policy they came up with. But as an English teacher, for example, this year, as well as three texts that the kids have to learn, I don't know if your kids went through this, with poetry anthology that the kids have to learn. There's 18 poems, and they don't know which poem is going to come up. in the course that we do, they know the one printed poem, and then they have to refer to a poem that they've remembered and compare the two. It's massive.
And do they have to be able to? Do they have the book with them?
No.
So they've got to be able to quote lines from 18 poems.
Yeah.
See now, but you're laughing. I could have done that. I could have learnt them all, and I'd have forgotten them. I'd have forgotten them by tea time.
Exactly.
But I could have gone into the room, and I could have done it. You know, when in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state and trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries and look upon myself and curse my foul. I learnt that last week. I learnt a King Lear thing for my drama class.
It stood you well in life.
Yeah, but it's not right, and you're exactly right. That's what Gove and Cummings could do as well. So they created an entire system to reward people like them and me, and to probably exclude or discriminate against, what would you say, Dave, 80% of kids, 85?
Oh, at least, and it's knowledge over understanding. So the understanding is not there.
No.
So you don't get a skill from doing that you can transfer to parts of your life.
No. Well, not unless you end up with a really, really weird job. But even this job, it doesn't demand that I start quoting poems out loud. In fact, my own producer gets really cross with me whenever I do that. I don't really understand why.
So two types of stress, I would say. A lot of them feel the sort of healthy, good stress with a competitive.
I like that. And don't be so. Biggest thing that you've taken away is that don't be afraid to ask for help.
Absolutely, if you're a parent. The stuff the schools can do.
Yeah, work it out. Because you know as a parent when something is unhealthy, when it's moving into unhealthy, even if it's even instincts. Thank you, Dave. Lovely stuff. It is 12:32. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Amelia Cox has your headline.
Energy, shipping and banking bosses will meet Sir Keir Starmer in Downing Street this afternoon. Oil prices have once again spiked after Donald Trump suggested he might seize Iran's Harg Island, where most of its oil is exported. Detectives have been given more time to question a man arrested after seven people were hit and injured by a car in Derby. A 36-year-old has been detained on suspicion of attempted murder. And the UK says claims made about a British diplomat expelled from Moscow over spying allegations are malicious and baseless. They're the second British diplomat this year to be removed from Russia for espionage accusations. LBC weather, showers in the north and east, tending to ease away for most. A mixture of cloud and bright spells, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC.
The Paramount Plus spring sale is on, with over 60% off Paramount Plus. Sign up to stream every episode of exclusive shows like the critically acclaimed hit Landman, brand new series The Madison, starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and new Yellowstone series Marshals. All for only $2.99 a month, only on Paramount Plus. But hurry, offer ends Tuesday. Standard monthly plan only for eligible customers. Saving when compared to the full regular monthly price. After 2 months, auto renews at $7.99 a month unless cancelled. 18 plus T's and C's apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
Are chocolate eggs truly bound to round? No. Waitrose have unveiled a rich number one Ruby Fruits flat egg, sprinkled with dried berries, a tangy marvel in confectionery, and the number one blonde chocolate almond croissant egg, topped with milk chocolate and crunchy roasted almonds. Chocolate eggs are only the beginning.
Indulge in a range of Easter treats at Waitrose, the home of food lovers.
Selected stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and Concessions.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
So it's a weird one that. Dave just absolutely nailed that thing about being able to memorise. Because I probably haven't managed to explain it to you perfectly. I could do that. I could learn poems. And they wouldn't stick in my head forever. But they stick in my head for long enough to do an exam. And I could do that in 2 days before the exam. There'd be a kid over there on the other side of the exam hall who has been paying attention all year, but who couldn't commit poems to memory as easily as I could. And I'd do better in the exam, even though they would work harder and had a better understanding of the text. And that is why stress is so hard to pin down and identify. More on this to come. Before that, Joseph Draper has been following a particularly egregious example of a problem that we've done a lot to cover on LBC about the relationships between freeholds and leaseholds. And even by the standard of that swamp, Joseph, this story is a stinker.
Yeah, it's shocking, and particularly for those involved. You know, it's becoming a real nightmare. We've spoken to dozens of families, James, effectively trapped, some of them in small one-bed flats in Hackney in East London, because their homes have basically become worthless. They say because the developer of the apartment block, the freeholder, failed to pay nearly £1 million in planning fees owed to the local council. And they say as a result now, mortgage lenders are refusing to support sales of the flats because of the risk, essentially, that the debt could get passed on to those leaseholders if the development company goes into administration. At least two sales we know have already fallen through of flats which should be worth around £500,000, residents wasting tens of thousands of pounds on solicitor's fees. Now, I've been speaking to some of the families affected.
So we have a two-year-old who, you know, it's adorable, but takes up an increasingly large amount of space, as you can see. He has, like, a lot of, you know, toys and stuff that come with him. He's still sharing a bedroom with us.
We're stuck, we're wasting money, and we just feel really, really trapped.
I mean, at this point, we've lost easily 10 grand, mm-hmm. that we're never going to see back. And we're not the only ones. There are numerous chains that have been impacted on by this. So, like, I would be pretty confident saying that the cost of all of this must, you know, it must be more than 50 grand at this point if you kind of add it all together.
Yeah. Flipping, eh?
Incredible amount of money, isn't it?
Yes.
And that one last resident you heard there, James, Richard Bell, says he called the developer whose company, Restoration Hackney, actually owns the building. He's a French national called Damien Joaquin. He became director in 2024, inheriting that debt on the property. We've reached out to him. He's been ignoring our calls. He's certainly not gotten back to us over the last few days with our requests for a comment on these allegations. Mm-hmm. When Richard asked him to pay off that money, though, this is what he says happened next.
You know, he was very clear when I spoke to him that if we pursued this in any way, he would simply allow the business to fold. Obviously, that could have ramifications for us. You know, it could impact the upkeep and maintenance of the building. It could impact on whether people want to buy flats in the building because it creates a huge amount of uncertainty. The guy was quite aggressive on the call, certainly.
And there's a quick fix here as well, James. Essentially, if Hackney Council rules out going after the leaseholders for this debt in writing, that would fix the situation for them. So far, though, the council's refused to rule that out, despite pressure from local MP Diane Abbott. A spokesperson told us that it's considering legal action against the developer and that it appreciates residents' frustrations. That could take years, though, with residents having to just wait around for that legal case to be resolved. Sebastian O'Kelly campaigns for leaseholders' rights. He says this reflects wider problems of accountability affecting millions of homes.
But the one party that's completely innocent in all this are the people who inadvertently thought it was a good idea to buy a home, and somehow or other they are now impacted and cannot sell, and their flats are basically valueless if they cannot be sold. So through the errors or graft of other people, ordinary families are now suffering.
So, James, the government, we know, is developing reforms which would ban future leaseholds, replacing them with common hold ownership. So residents would share ownership of buildings like this one. That could take years, though. Residents in Hackney say they need help now, but they're having to just put their lives on hold.
It would come up in a survey, would it? Or
yeah, exactly. So a lot of them have gone through the process of trying to buy a new home, trying to sell their property. Solicitors have then found this debt, and the sales have fallen through at the last minute because mortgage lenders are pulling out, refusing to support the sale of these properties because there's just too much risk associated with them.
And Hackney Council, I mean, they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. They can't write the money off. And yet they can't tell the residents that they are not going to be on the hook for it either. I mean, that second bit of that equation sounds negotiable. How surprised would you be if there was a bit of movement now that you've brought attention to this?
Certainly residents are hoping for that, James, because they've been engaging with the council for months now, trying to get that piece of paper, essentially, which frees them, which allows them to move on with their lives, to sell their property. For whatever reason, the council has been resistant to that so far. They say they've received responses from the council which they've described as overly bureaucratic, essentially not recognising the human impact
of this story. Well, the system won't accommodate. So it reminds me, the conversation we're having reminds me very much of the cladding crisis and the cladding scandal and the difficulties people had in moving through that. But obviously it's got nothing to do with cladding, but it's precisely the same jeopardy that these residents find themselves in.
Yeah, and
they're stuck.
Yeah, they're completely stuck. Sebastian O'Kelly actually drew a reference to that particular example you've described there, but when initially leaseholders were held liable to replace that cladding. I think that did change in a legal challenge later on. But Sebastian O'Kelly, he's a campaigner, of course, who we just heard from, he's drawn that exact comparison that this just speaks to the injustices, James, in the leaseholding system, that leaseholders take all the risk and have none of the benefits, really, of owning their own home.
It will come too late for the people that you've been speaking to, but the government is, of course, undertaking sweeping reforms, aren't they, at the moment?
Absolutely,
including a ban on new leasehold flats, so that this situation couldn't arise again in the future.
Exactly.
In a new property.
Yeah, but it could take years.
It's an anxiety dream, isn't it, mate? We're talking about exams at the moment, which is where most people have their anxiety dreams. But if you find out that your house isn't yours, in a sense, and that you don't have agency over what you do, when you can sell it, when you can move out, that poor woman who wants to have another baby, but thinks, I can't have a nun, I can't get out, and it's stressful enough going through the property market when you haven't got this whopping great thing hanging over your shoulder, but when you have, it must be unbearable.
Yeah, it's one of the most stressful things you can do in your life, isn't it, trying to change house? And I've actually been to that property, James, that flat. I mean, you know, it's tiny, it's full of toys, there's just not enough space for this family to live, and all they want to do is just move on with their lives.
Yes, and they can't. It's a brilliant piece of reporting, Joseph, and people can read it in more detail on the LBC website, lbc.co.uk, and probably the app as well. We've got an app. Did you know that?
Really?
Yeah, we should mention it more. It's 12:43. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mentioned anxiety dreams, and that must be relevant, mustn't it? So why do we still have anxiety dreams about exams when we're in our 50s? And the answer is because of the stress that you went through at the time, somehow sitting inside you forever. There's a phrase that they use, I think it's Winnicott, one of the great sort of godfathers of psychotherapy. The body keeps the score. If you're having an anxiety dream now about exams, that's because the body has kept the score. And what you want to do with children, with your children, is get them to do well in their exams without them being actually wounded by the stress that people like me used to insist was actually a good thing. It's crazy, right? Squeeze in one more call before the break. Charlene is in Southwark. Charlene, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I was just calling because my son did his GCSEs last year.
Yeah.
And whilst I wasn't like, this is the be all and end all of your life, you know, you've got to do really well. I really wanted him to understand that what he puts in is essentially what he's going to get out. So I felt like there's balance. I felt like it was a good level of stress for him in some way, because I thought to myself, if you look at anyone kind of like just around, you know, people's life stories, there's always an element, it feels like, of, you know, hard graft, sleepless nights.
Did you have that?
You know,
did he get stressed?
No.
Do you wish that he had got a bit more stressed? Or were you happy with the balance that happened? Well, I suppose we have to ask how he did, Charlene.
Oh, he passed all them. He failed Spanish, which was expected.
Okay.
He never took an interest in learning a language. So he got 4s, 5s, and he got a 1.6.
Okay.
So I was pleased with what he got. I knew he was capable of much more, and he will admittedly tell me now, you know.
Well, that's the bit, isn't it? That's the bit for all parents there, as you say, because I mean, you know, he could have done much better and he didn't, then you sort of think then maybe he should have been a little bit more anxious about, or a little bit more
and like
I don't know what the word is.
He openly admits that now, like he could have done so much more than what he actually did, you know. And that was one of the things I just felt like when we were discussing in the run-up to his GCSEs, I was saying to him, this is probably the first thing that these young adults going into adulthood are faced with, where they've actually got to put an element of work in. And I said to him, this is the first thing, you know, you've gone through school. And essentially, I did say to him, he's been at school for the last 5 years. And, you know, without saying it, this is kind of what you've got to show for it, you know. Yeah. And that's
but you don't want to do that. See, well, the last thing we want is for them to actually be overly daunted by the, I don't even know how important these exams are. I mean, A-levels, GCSEs, you know, they're very important in terms of where you go next and what you do next. But looking at the world at the moment, if I was 16, I'd be very, very, very stressed, I think, about what the future looked like. Because every job I fancy doing could have disappeared by the time I get out of school or by the time I get out of college or university. And so you're sort of constantly mitigating against that as well. It sounds to me like you got it just about right, with that constant knowledge that if you'd turned up the heat a tiny bit, he might have got better grades in his GCSEs, and that would have had an impact upon going forward. But it's better than being really, really stressed. I'm fascinated by it. I love it when we stumble into things. Just before Charlene came on, the thing about the anxiety dream, right? Do you have it? Do you have a dream when you... So that means the pressure you were putting on yourself during your exam period, even if it was 40 years ago, was such that it's done you permanent harm, because your subconscious is still struggling to deal with that stress. And yet, if you're anything like I used to be, you're still convinced that it's a good thing, and that it's... But, goodness me, so where on earth is the balance? 12:47 is the time.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Keir Starmer meets private sector leaders as the war in the Middle East threatens household bills. Could there be a new regime emerging in Iran? And how the government supports young families.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At Lidl, treat yourself to a whole Easter lunch for eight for under £1.60 per person, with all the tantalising trimmings. That's a leg of lamb, carrots, potatoes, parsnips, mint sauce, and of course, the gravy. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. See lidl.co.uk/vendless for details.
The Paramount Plus spring sale is on, with over 60% off Paramount Plus. Sign up to stream every episode of exclusive shows like the critically acclaimed hit Landman, brand new series The Madison starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and new Yellowstone series Marshals, all for only $2.99 a month, only on Paramount Plus. But hurry, offer ends Tuesday. Standard monthly plan only for eligible customers. Saving when compared to the full regular monthly price. After 2 months, auto renews at $7.99 a month unless cancelled. 18 plus T's and C's apply.
Imagine you in a nice comfy seat with your hands behind your head, taking in the views instead of taking on the road, maybe even taking a nap. That's the bliss of getting where you need to go without worrying about driving. Book your train journey via avantiwestcoast.co.uk and we'll take you there. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Sunday Leaguers! Dog lovers! Bait clubbers! Banger dancers! Baby ravers, potters. Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 50% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K, or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends April 19th, 2026. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
It is 10-1. I don't think it was Winnicott who came up with the body keeps the score, but I'm sure that a psychotherapist listening will let me know shortly. And I tell you what, the number of people whose memories have been jogged by my little reference to anxiety dreams is extraordinary. And yet not extraordinary at all, because that's what happens. Your body keeps the score. So your subconscious is essentially telling you when you have an anxiety dream about exams that you still haven't processed the stress and anxiety that you felt when you were doing your GCSEs or O-levels. Which brings us back to the conversation we're having about a former head of Harrow saying that stress and anxiety are good. Now, you can't have too much of it, almost, except, of course, you can. But how do you know when this much is too much? Back to that shortly, but I've got a missing word round for you. One of the stranger missing word rounds of recent years. Soldiers didn't even use it! Exclamation mark. Residents slam frivolous war memorial plans for blank in Road of Remembrance, Folkestone. I saw this story earlier, had a different headline on it. The story has moved on while we have been on air. But the missing word remains the same. Soldiers didn't even use it! Exclamation mark. Residents slam frivolous war memorial plans for blank in Road of Remembrance, Folkestone. You can only play if you don't know the answer. Remember, if you know the answer, then you can't play. That's the rules. 12:51 is the time. JJ is in Lewisham on stress, anxiety, children and exams. JJ, what would you like to say? Say.
I would like to say that I think it all depends on how you present, you know, the future to young people. If you say, if they've got GCSEs or A-levels coming up and I've got a child who's in each of those camps, if you present that as high stakes and, yeah, if you don't get this, you're going to fail, you've got no future, then of course it's going to be no one, you know, it's going to be really uncomfortable, stressful, and it's a horrible experience. And that's not conducive to learning or reviving. Well,
except for a small bunch of people for whom it was conducive. And unfortunately, as Dave up in Liverpool pointed out, those people ended up in charge of education for years.
Yeah, exactly. You've got the wrong people at the top who are making decisions. And they have no connection to the reality of what, you know, young people are going through. And yeah, the whole education system does need reform. But in terms of, you know, like GCSEs or A-level, with my children, I say to them, you know, if you fail your exams, and I use the word fail loosely, but if you don't get the result that you want, then these are the options. This is what's going to happen. You can resit them. In the case of A-levels, you can take a year out. You can, you know, there's other options available to you. It just means you may not be able to go along with the timeline that you want to or that everyone else might be going along with. But it's not be. It's not, you know, it's not.
Does that work?
I mean, I don't know. I'll have to wait and see, right?
Some teenagers would be like, yeah, it's all very well you saying that, but you don't understand. Of course I have to do well. I won't be able to go to the university I want to go to if I do badly. I won't be able to do the A-levels. I just, shut up, Mum. Shut up, Mum, will you? I don't need to hear this. I've got to go and do some work.
All right,
whose side are you on? I didn't ask to be born.
At that point, I say, okay, so what are we going to do about it? So what are the choices in front of you? What are you doing right now that's going to help you?
Yeah.
What are you doing right now that's not going to help you? I think, and you can't have that conversation when they're right in the middle of stress, right?
So can't. That's a great point. That's a great point.
No,
so sometimes you just have to sit with the pain.
Yeah,
with the stress until things have calmed down a bit and then have a conversation.
You definitely, because you don't make a plan. You have to make a plan before you get to that point. And I always say to my students and also to my children as well, it's all about stress. Strategies. It's definitely about strategies. You can learn, you know, for the most part, you can learn what you need to learn within a given time frame. And you know, I know you were saying about cramming. I'm one of those people who procrastinates and leaves it to the last minute. If that's your strategy for life and living, then that's your strategy. But for others who don't, kind of, if it doesn't work for them, and for a lot of people that doesn't, but I'd say you need to have a plan right up to you, obviously before your exams, you know, and you need to put that plan in place, and you need to organise your time. You need to have little milestones in front of you that are going to help you.
And kids who genuinely can't do that probably do, to go back to Dave, probably do need a little bit of help. They probably need to talk to the school about dispensations and extra time or sitting it somewhere else. Or sitting. Sometimes something as simple as sitting at the back of the exam room.
Yeah,
you've got OCD or you've got some other, you know, neurodiverse, you think everyone's looking at you. All of these things can be helpful, can't they?
They definitely can be. And I think we need to, more and more, we're taking those things into consideration and realising it's not, you know, we can't have a cookie-cutter approach for every student. But at the same time, you know, we want to accommodate as many people as possible to make them, you know, to get outcomes that are appropriate and suitable and achievable as well. But at the same time, just to caveat this, I do think stress, you know, you need an element of stress, right? You can't go through life without.
Well, you need it. Well, you can, but you never do anything.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, you can't go through life. I'd say successfully, but you know, if you want to achieve something,
then of course you can't.
The world doesn't operate on our own time frame, right?
And that's not waiting for you to turn up, right?
Exactly.
I love this. Thank you. Let's hope that your tactics do. Actually, before you go, Mick's been in touch from Manchester. He goes, are we just going to ignore the fact that James asked JJ what she wanted to say? I thought that deserved more, to be honest with you. But sometimes, I suppose by drawing attention to it, I ruined the magic, haven't I? JJ, stay safe. Touching a few nerves on the exams, Heidi says, 40 years after I actually sat them, I know when I'm stressed because I dream I'm sitting my A-levels. Bessel van der Kolk, thank you to everybody who has reminded me of the Dutch psychotherapist who did the work and I think coined the phrase, the body keeps the score. But Ellie, who is 52, says, I still regularly have this dream about exams and I always wake up and have to remind myself that it's all okay. It's my A-levels that I'm dreaming of. I've gone on to get a degree and a postgraduate, so I'm being extra kind to my twins who will be sitting their A-levels in 2 months. The stress that we put on ourselves, it's extraordinary. I failed all my exams, James, says Anthony, because that level of stress just doesn't work on me. I shut down. It's like if I was shouted at as a child, it will not work. I would shut down. I'd block it out. And my middle son is the same. If I tell him off, I can see that I've lost him. And like me, he's basically bulletproof to it. There's stubbornness involved, yes, but it also means that higher pressure things will just be avoided. And I guess the foundations are being laid for this kind of stuff very, very, very early. Alison is in, I don't know where you are. Well, you're in Essex, but I don't know what town you're in.
I'm in Abridge.
Abridge?
I'm in Abridge in Essex.
Is that spelt like Abridge?
Yes, but it's called Abridge, not Abridge.
I looked at it. I thought they'd made a mistake, because I'd call it Abridge, wouldn't I? Abridge, I'd Abridge, Abridge.
Google Maps, and it makes me laugh every time. Yes.
Abridge, not Haybridge or Weybridge, but Abridge.
No, Abridge, yeah.
But anyway, I'm using all your time up. I'll be quiet. You talk.
So I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, and I specialise in stress, anxiety and trauma. And I still have that fear about exams. So in 2024, I wrote a book called Teens Easing Exam Nerves, because I was an invigilator and I just saw the amount of stress our teens were under. So I've been in exam rooms where one particular young lady had to have a bucket beside her because she was sick for every exam that she was in. And the problem
I was going to say, how do you tell? But to be honest, if someone's puking in a bucket, you don't need to be Sherlock Holmes to work out that something's wrong, do you?
Absolutely. And the schools are getting more and more access arrangements and requests in coming in. They can't cope with them. And there is good stress. I absolutely agree with that. We need that for motivation to act and to perform. But it's in the short term. The issue The issue we have is that it's in the longer term that we have a problem when it becomes chronic.
And so it means more training and looking out for the signs and seeking the help that you need. Thank you, Alison. That's one of the most unprofessional things I've ever experienced in a radio studio.
Sorry about that. You know what I did?
What?
FaceTimed myself.
So you're ringing. Did anyone else hear that? Did you hear it? Did the phone? Because it was quite funny when I said hello. And then I think Alison said hello, but I was saying hello because I could hear the ringtone on Sheila Fogarty's phone.
Hello, Alison.
Hello. It's all right. That's it, I think, for
hello,
today.
James.
Hello, Sheila. You're all right. Are you on the phone? Hello. Hello? Hello?
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
She's done this before.
Listen.
What?
99.5% of the time I have my phone on silent.
Yeah.
Every now and again I have it off silent.
Yeah.
And that happens.
Hello.
Hello.
If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on the Free Global Prayer app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily. Lots of love for this week's Full Disclosure, by the way, with Eric Schlosser of Fast Food Nation fame. It's an absolutely fascinating conversation, and I'm saying that without any false modesty. Download the official LBC app. It's free from your app store now. Tom Sawbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Hello.
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 Anyone there? I hope so, because I'm here for the next 3 hours. I'm going to start the programme by talking again about what we face cost of living-wise as a result of this war in the Middle East. Obviously, it's also very much about the lives and the livelihoods as well of the people who live in the Middle East. But we know that the Prime Minister this afternoon, Keir Starmer, is going to meet with private sector leaders as the war, not just in Iran, but in the wider Middle East, threatens household bills. Also, could there be a new regime emerging in Iran? Donald Trump has hinted at it, a more reasonable regime that they're doing business with. We'll keep an eye on that. These comments by Tony Blair about the left and anti-Semitism, we'll look into that too, and hear how the government says it's supporting young families.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock. 1 o'clock, sorry. The Prime Minister will meet business leaders this afternoon, though he insists conflict in the Middle East is not our war. Oil prices have spiked again after Donald Trump threatened to seize Iran's Harg Island, where most of its oil is exported. Kemi Badenoch says Sir Keir Starmer needs to be looking at other options.
The Prime Minister keeps having meetings. He doesn't need to have any more meetings. The oil and gas sector have said what it is that they need. And this is what Conservative policy is. Let's scrap the windfall tax. They haven't been getting a windfall. Their businesses are closing. People are investing elsewhere. Let's allow UK export finance to start, supporting clean energy, oil and gas drilling.
The Conservative leader will be taking your calls on LBC from 7 o'clock this evening. Five people are still in hospital after a car hit pedestrians outside a pub in Derby on Saturday. Police have been given more time to question a 36-year-old man who has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. The Foreign Office says spying allegations against a British diplomat expelled from Moscow are malicious and baseless. The unnamed official is the second British diplomat this year to be removed from Russia. The final details of the compensation scheme for drivers' missold car finance agreements will be published later. The Financial Conduct Authority previously said 14 million deals between 2007 and 2024 were unfair. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has more details.
It is thought that each missold PCP or hire purchase finance deal could be eligible for around £700. And it's all because of a scandal that meant customers were not properly told about the levels of commission that were being paid by lenders to car dealers.
And Tottenham are said to be in talks with Roberto De Zerbi about becoming their new boss. Igor Tudor's stepped down after just 44 days in the job. He'd have 5 winless games in the Premier League. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 93 points at 10,060. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, showers in the north and east tending to ease away, a mixture of cloud and bright spells for most, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Over 5 million homes are at risk of flooding, yet many people don't realise they're in danger. Even if you've never been flooded before, it can happen to you. Protect your family and home. Prepare, act, survive. Prepare a bag including medicines and insurance documents. Act by moving important items upstairs or as high as possible. Survive by listening to emergency services. Search what to do in a flood and sign up to flood warnings on gov.uk.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. We are keeping, obviously, a very close eye on any significant developments in the Middle East, on the war in Iran and elsewhere in the Middle East as well. Excuse me. But I want to focus again this hour on how it might affect and is already affecting the day-to-day lives of people here in the UK and in wider Europe as well, experiencing similar things. It's looking pretty clear that lots of essentials are already increasing in price. That includes council tax, water bills, for all kinds of different reasons. But we know that the cost of food and food inflation has been difficult to control and to bring down, or to bring down quickly. That it had started to come down, but that may soon go back in the wrong direction because of this war in Iran. And to that end, we've heard something from the Chancellor last week, a hint that some people will get assistance, but not all, if things go even more badly than they already are, because I think the general consensus is that we have about 6 weeks before we start to see the real full impact of what's going on there on our lives here. But we know that the Prime Minister this afternoon is going to meet people from the private sector to look at the cost of living. They've launched their local election campaign as well with the cost of living in mind. So my question really to you, once we've gone through the various strands of this and elements of this and levers that the government could pull to help you, is what help do you need now? Because that, I think, will give us a sense, and you a sense, of what help you will need depending on food prices and energy prices going up. And there will be other implications as well. What help do you need in that meeting with the private sector? I imagine from the retail sector, the food industry, the farming industry. What assistance do you need? What do you want to see the government do? 0345 6060 973. I was reading this morning, two Australian states have decided to make all public transport completely free for the time being. I wonder whether that's something that you think would help you. Literally all of it, wherever you're going within that state. That's something they've done. There have been calls from Kemi Badenoch today to reduce VAT on our fuel bills, to get rid of some of those green levies, possibly permanently, possibly temporarily. Is that the kind of thing you think the government should be looking at? 0345 6060 973. Let's get a sense of things from Dr. Jo Mitchell, again, Professor of Economics at the Bristol Business School at the University of West England. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sheila.
When we spoke last week, you were talking, as others have, about the real dangers of a recession here. What do you think the conversations after 4 o'clock, when the Prime Minister meets the private sector today, should look at and should consist of?
I think the starting point has to be an acceptance that we are collectively poorer. The situation we face as a nation, as an island, is that we are going to face higher prices for food, for fuel, for a whole range of imported goods, and we are substantially reliant on imported goods. So ultimately, the question has to be, who takes the hit? Somebody is going to have to reduce their consumption of energy, of food, and so on. And all of the different mechanisms that are being talked about, whether it's subsidies, whether it's tax removal, whether it's incentives for business, whether it's asking business not to put prices up, and so on and so forth, all of these ultimately are about managing who are the winners and losers from this, or perhaps more accurately, who are the big losers and who are the, you know, the smaller losers. And I think really that's the way the conversation should be thought about. Ultimately, the room for maneuver is therefore quite limited. There's no way that the government can protect all of us, because the physical reality is such that it can't be done. So I think it's a question of distribution, ultimately. It's a zero-sum game now. And my sense is that we can't afford the blanket policy sort of responses that we saw, for example, at the end of the pandemic, because they're hugely expensive. And we do know that there's pressure on public debt. We keep having these ridiculous conversations around every budget about there's a black hole and then there isn't a black hole and then it reappears. And this, you know, very meaningless conversation masks the true reality of the sticky situation we're in, the kind of sticky situation
we are in now. Poorer and we need to deal with our debt.
Exactly. Now we do have a real problem. In much of the kind of sort of hyped media talk about maxed out credit cards and so on is really quite silly around fiscal events. But the next one, the budget, is going to be very tight because the fiscal rules undoubtedly are now broken.
Yes.
And are not going to be met. To come back to your point, I think people like
that, sorry, if I may, it's interesting you say that, because in her speech to the Commons, I think it was early part of last week, the Chancellor didn't seem to think they were broken, did she, or would be broken. She said all of this will be done within our fiscal rules.
I suppose there's a hope, I mean, maybe there's still a sense of hope that that is just about possible, that de-escalation takes place, oil starts flowing, there's some good news, you know, interest rates might come down a bit, but it feels extremely unlikely to me. I think the very strong base case scenario is that growth is going to be lower, interest rates are going to be potentially higher, and that feeds into effectively the fiscal rules broken.
It was interesting to hear this morning, it was here on LBC actually, that we know one of the immediate cost impacts of the war has been the cost of fuel. But the Isle of Man ran out of diesel yesterday. I mean, and we've seen people on heating oil immediately feel that the impact of that cost.
Yeah.
The reality of this going on.